Hey, this is Brandy Rhodes, and you're listening to Salamonster Sounds Off.
Come on! Take her out, take her out! Come on, you son of a bitch! Come on! Son of a bitch! Get off me!
This is going to be a match that you have never seen in New Japan. This is not about 5 stars, 7 stars, not about how many times you can go for your finishing move. This is a fight. It's a war. It's Alpha versus Omega. And Kenny, you are going to get the shit kicked out of you. Understand me? Huh? You get it? I've been in Japan 60 times. This match at the Tokyo Dome is the most important match I've ever had in Japan. Will you laugh at that fuckface? Shut your mouth.
It's business time, baby.
The Salamonster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered a streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat, delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 526 of the Salamonster Sounds Off here for Saturday, December 16, 2017. A day early here, I am the Salamonster. I did mention last week that I would be recording a day early. I have some place to be tomorrow, but tomorrow is a pay-per-view day, so I didn't want to wait on my predictions. It is Clash of Champions this weekend. Oh joy. We are going to do Clash of Champions predictions here on this show, but there's been quite a bit of news and rumor floating around here this morning. A lot of good stuff to get into. First, want to show some love to Audible, as I do at the beginning of every show. We are heading into the end of the year. We've had a pretty damn good year in terms of Audible signups. A few weeks left. Take advantage of the 30-day trial using our link, audibletrial.com/Salamonster. If you haven't already done so, get on that. Share that link with whoever you think might be able to use it. You sign up, you get one free audiobook of your choice. If you want any recommendations, hit me up. I'm more than happy to give you. There's tons of wrestling books on there, but audibletrial.com/Salamonster is the place to go. It is a great service, and you get a free book for doing nothing. Nothing! Go ahead and take advantage. If you want to become a PayPal VIP, you can do so on thesalamonster.com. $10 or more will get your wrestling nickname and a shout-out. We've had tremendous support this year, more support this year, honestly, than any other year before. And I thank you all for that. And in particular, we have a lot of regulars, a lot of PayPal VIPs who donate on a regular basis just because they like what they hear. So I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, the Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the DC Slayer Marcus Cross, Left Hook Luke Himes, Midnight Menace Nick Knotts, Scott the Stump Woodford, Stephen Foulmouth Fowler, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Clayton the Creepy Uncle, always got to get the Creepy Uncle in there, the Plymouth Party Animal, Ben Chesters, Faith Hardknocks Harvey, who's a first-time donator, so thank you to Faith. Samuel Boo Boo, thank you for your donation. And also, I want to give a shout-out to Combat Reyes, one of our loyal listeners. He's been in the hospital a few days after his appendix burst. He was very, very sick, I was told. I don't know if he's still in the hospital. Hopefully not. If he's out there listening, I hope you're feeling better, brother. Get well soon. Again, thank you to everybody who made a donation this week. And really, all month, all year. We have a few weeks left. Tis the season. But for everybody who's made a donation, however big or small, any kind of contribution to the show, buying a shirt, using our Audible link, telling somebody else about the podcast, just know that I appreciate it more than you will know. And this has been our biggest and best year ever. Hopefully 2018 will be even bigger. Wrestling Radio Awards, for those who are not aware, nominations still open. If you would like to nominate this podcast, you can still write in the name of the show under the category for Show of the Year. You can write in any of the interviews that I've done this year, if you liked one in particular over the other. There is a category for Male and Female Interview of the Year. Dave Lagana, Justin Roberts, just two of the names I interviewed this year. And actually, somebody else who I interviewed only a few days ago was Brandi Rhodes, former Eden Styles from WWE, the wife of Cody Rhodes, now former Ring of Honor World Champion. But Brandi was able to give me some time the other night. We had a conversation. Very cool to talk to her. You can listen to the whole interview. It's only about 15 minutes long, so it's a quick listen. It's up on our YouTube channel right now in full. Just so you know, I am including the interview at the end of this podcast. So when this show is over, after the mailbag, I'm going to tack on the interview with Brandi for anybody who hasn't heard it. For whatever reason, can't, you know, get over to YouTube or doesn't want to use YouTube. Since it's not that long, I'm just going to post the whole interview at the end of the show. So if you have not heard it, you may as well just stick around. And when we get to the end of the show, you'll be able to hear the whole thing in full. Brandi was at Final Battle on Friday night. That was the big Ring of Honor end of year show they have every December, Final Battle. This was from the Manhattan Center, Hammerstein Ballroom. I was not there. Couldn't make it, but Brandi was there. She came down to the ring with Cody for the main event. She actually got involved in the main event, did a dive out of the ring onto Dalton Castle's boys before all of them got ejected from ringside by Todd Sinclair. Dalton Castle did beat Cody to win the Ring of Honor World title. I'm surprised it took this long. I mean, I thought Dalton Castle should have won that thing at least a year ago. But he's got it now. We'll see what kind of a reign he has or how long of a run he gets with it. The finish came out of nowhere, though. I mean, I saw the match. I thought the match was good. Didn't have a lot of heat for a Ring of Honor, you know, pay-per-view main event, I thought, at least not until the end. Cody bled. He did a big blade job later on in the match. He also dyed his hair blonde. I'm not a big fan of that look. Maybe he's trying to be more like his father, but he pulled the hood back when he first came out, and everybody was sort of shocked by what they saw. But he's got, you know, basically like the platinum blonde hair now, which is kind of weird. I guess it'll take some time to get used to seeing him like that. But the finish came out of nowhere. People just didn't seem to expect it. He hit the bangarang, he got the pin, hit his finish once, and got a pin. What a concept. But people were happy. Once it sunk in, they were cheering, they were happy. We'll see what kind of a run he gets. Before I get to anything else, and I am going to do Clash of Champions predictions here in a little bit, but this story is too big, potentially, I should say potentially too big, to not lead off with. Rumors abound that Vince McMahon may soon be reviving the XFL. Nothing has been confirmed. The rumor originated with a blogger named Brad Shepard, who wrote on Twitter on Friday night, Vince McMahon is looking to bring back the XFL and may announce it on January 25th, 2018. And after that, David Bixenspan, who writes for Deadspin, he reached out to WWE for comment. And the response that he received was most interesting. The statement that WWE gave him is as follows. They said, Vince McMahon has established and is personally funding a separate entity from WWE called Alpha Entertainment to explore investment opportunities across the sports and entertainment landscapes, including professional football. Mr. McMahon has nothing further to announce at this time. That is the statement from WWE. And I think the key word there is including professional football. Now, Bix and Span specifically asked them to either confirm or deny the XFL rumor. He didn't ask about anything else. He didn't ask about this Alpha Entertainment entity. He didn't ask about anything else other than can you confirm or deny the fact that Vince McMahon is looking to bring back or is about to announce a revival of the XFL. And that was the statement that WWE put out. They did not confirm. They did not deny. So what we do know is that Vince has set up this other company. This other company is completely separate from WWE, and he is funding it with his own money. He is not funding it with money from the company, from the coffers of WWE. This is his own money. Whatever he ends up doing, it's his money. He is free to do with it whatever he wants. If he wants to give some of it to his wife to try for a third Senate bid, although I guess she doesn't have to now because she works for the government, but God knows he spent, you know, what was it, $100 million of his money trying to get her elected and it didn't work out, but he's free to do whatever he wants to do with his money. It's you know, this company is now his own little sandbox for him to play in. That was not the case with the XFL. You know, WWE turned a huge profit at that time. Vince blew a good chunk of that profit on the XFL trying to make it work. I think he and NBC were on the hook each for it was something like $35 million a piece, I think, that they ended up losing out on. But that was WWE money. That's the big difference. That is not an issue here. But Vince, here's the thing with Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon has never had any success outside of WWE. He tried with the Bodybuilding Federation, and that was a failure. He tried with the XFL, and that was a failure. He tried with a restaurant in Times Square. Good food. I went there. I liked it, but that was a failure. As most things are in Times Square, because the rent is absolutely ridiculous. So that didn't work out too well. They had plans for a WWF hotel and casino out in Vegas. They bought the old Debbie Reynolds hotel and casino, and they ended up selling it for a profit. I think they actually made a profit of about $1 million. So they actually, you know, at least they made money on that deal, but that was not their plan. Their plan was not to buy and sell property. That's not the business that they're in. They had all of, I remember the mock-ups for this WWE hotel and casino, the big logo on top, and that didn't exactly pan out the way they had hoped. If he really is planning to bring back the XFL, it's a disaster waiting to happen. I mean, you look at this guy's track record with outside projects, it is a disaster waiting to happen. And remember, you know, when ESPN did their 30 for 30 special many months ago on the XFL, in that last scene, it was Vince McMahon and Dick Ebersol, who worked for, you know, for NBC at the time. They were having dinner. And you know, McMahon and Ebersol have been friends going back years and years and years, going back to when they worked together on the old Saturday night's main event shows on NBC. And the final scene of this 30 for 30 special was Vince and Ebersol at the dinner table talking about the XFL, waxing, you know, nostalgic about the XFL. And Vince McMahon flat out admitted, it was very obvious, he said as much, he admitted that he would love to have another chance at, you know, trying again with the XFL or a football league. Again, I don't remember exactly what the quote was, but it was very obvious that he wanted to give this another go. He didn't feel as though they had a fair shake the first time. They had unfinished business. People didn't give it enough of a chance. And I will say this, you know, it is true when you're starting up a new league, you know, the way that they were, you do need to give it some time to see if it works. Now, that doesn't mean that if they let the XFL go another one or two seasons, that all of a sudden it would have blossomed into this profitable alternative to the NFL. Chances are it probably would have flopped either way. There were a lot of people who did not give them a chance after the first few weeks. Remember that first week? It did monster ratings. And then it steadily declined every single week thereafter. And, you know, he made a mockery of the whole thing. He tried to manufacture feuds between people. The whole Jesse Ventura, Rusty Tillman stuff, which I know I've talked about here before. He did these absolutely embarrassing pro wrestling type skits, sending a cameraman into the women's locker room. Can you imagine him trying that now? So that was just, it was embarrassing on every level. It wasn't funny. He basically turned it into a WWE version of the NFL. Now, the NFL has a lot of problems itself right now, but here's the thing about the NFL, and I'm not claiming to be a football expert, I'm a casual observer, you know, but I'm well aware of what's been going on with the NFL. It's kind of what I do for a living. I mean, I'm up on all the media stuff and everything, so I'm very up to speed on the problems that the NFL has been having. But here's the thing about all these problems that the NFL is having, okay? Ratings are not declining because people hate Roger Goodell. And believe me, there's a lot of people who don't like Roger Goodell. Jerry Jones is not the only one. But ratings are not declining because people hate the commissioner. Ratings are not declining because a handful of players won't kneel for the anthem. They're declining because there's too much football. And there's too much bad football. Now, college football is huge. College football, I think, will always be huge. But college football is huge. There's plenty of interest in college football. Then you have NFL games, right? On Sunday, Monday, Thursday, every single week. I don't watch the Thursday night games, but I've seen the ratings for them, and they're not great. And from everything I'm always reading, a lot of these games, like the Thursday night games in particular, are between shitty teams. So, you know, naturally, you know, you're not going to get that big of an audience if you have a match on a Thursday night between two teams who suck, or between two teams who aren't even in contention. And this is the NFL, right? This is supposed to be the elite of the elite. Do you really think that offering more football from a new league with inferior players Do you think that this is somehow going to produce all of these new eyeballs? All of these people are going to migrate over to the XFL or some new entity? Of course not. But if Vince McMahon is hell-bent on having a football league and wants to use his own money to finance it, then you know what? More power to him. I have no problem with it. Pretty high probability it's going to fail. But it's his money. He can do with it whatever he wants to. Now, having said all of this, there is no confirmation that this is an XFL revival. Right now, this is all just rumor and speculation. WWE fueled it by not coming out and denying it, because now everybody is going to think, well, they didn't deny it, so that must mean there could be something to that. There could be. Yes, there could be something to this. But let's say it's not the XFL. Maybe it's something else. Maybe Vince wants to buy his own NFL franchise. Maybe he wants to buy a franchise and he can sit up in the skybox on headset badgering the announcers. You know, I don't know. Maybe these entertainment opportunities that WWE talked about in that statement, right? Investment opportunities, entertainment opportunities. Maybe he wants to invest in something that can air on the WWE network. Maybe they want to expand on the network beyond just wrestling programming, and they want to, you know, put other sports on the network and other types of TV shows that Vince can invest in. That's a possibility too. Even though this is a separate entity from WWE, doesn't mean that Vince couldn't invest in something and then a deal gets worked out where perhaps something can air on the network. Because believe me, the one thing I know that they are trying to do, they're always trying to boost network subscriptions. They want to boost that network number in the worst way. Network's been around since 2014. This February is going to be the 4-year anniversary of the WWE Network. And it seems to me they've kind of hit a wall. You know, 2 million was sort of this grand number that they had envisioned. In fact, I think early on they were saying 2 to 3 million. They are nowhere near that. So, you know, at some point you've got to say to yourself, how do we get to that number? If we really want to get to 2.5, 3 million people, how do we do that? And it stands to reason that you might have to just consider putting something on the network other than pro wrestling. Whether it's other types of movies or TV shows, game shows, other sports. But I think the bigger story to watch here, because at the end of the day, I don't give a shit if the XFL comes back or not. You know, if it comes back, I'd probably watch initially out of curiosity, but, you know, I'm not clamoring for the XFL to come back, and I'm not even sure, honestly, how that would work, because if you remember when the XFL debuted, the whole thing was, the NFL's a bunch of pansies, this is smash mouth old school football. I think the very first play of the very first XFL game, remember the whole point was you had two players running at the ball in midfield, and whoever caught the ball, their team would start. And I think on the very first play, one of the players got injured. I think he separated his shoulder or something. But, you know, with all this talk now about concussions and look, WWE has all of these concussion lawsuits outstanding against them. I wonder how that would work. You know, can that even work? Can you market a sports league that's based on, you know, almost saying, hey, you know, they're being too cautious and too safe. They're a bunch of pansies and pussies and, you know, the XFL, we're not going to wear helmets or we're not going to do this or do that. I honestly don't know how that would fly today. I don't think it would. So that's another consideration to make. But I think the bigger story to watch here may be the fact that Vince McMahon has started his own company apart from WWE. That's a big deal. And could this be a sign? Could this be a sign that Vince is starting to look at maybe delegating some more responsibility and more power to other people? Maybe to his son-in-law. Right? I mean, it's possible. We all know that it's inevitable at some point, whether something happens to him or... Because I mean, it's hard for me to envision a scenario where Vince just wakes up one day and says, you know what, I think today's a good day for me to step down. I almost think that the only way that will ever happen is if he just croaks, or he comes down, God forbid, with some kind of serious, disease, and is sort of forced to step down because he doesn't have all of his faculties about him, because I just can't see him voluntarily stepping down. It's all he's ever known. This guy is 70-something years old, I think 72. And he, you know, works out like a maniac. He barely sleeps. It's amazing he's made it this far. But this is all he knows how to do. He's a workaholic. Anybody who's ever worked with him has said, this guy is a maniac. I can't even keep up with him, and I'm half his age. I just can't see somebody like that just saying, okay, you know what? I've had enough. But this is interesting. This is something that I did not see coming, that he would just start a completely different entity and, you know, maybe he has all of these other interests, and maybe, you know, he just decided, you know what, I'd rather dedicate more of my time to this, and WWE is in really good hands. We have it set up with a mix of, you know, family members and non-wrestling people. George Barrios has worked there for so long, and he's in an executive position. Maybe he just starts to delegate more responsibility to other people. And creatively speaking, maybe that's not such a bad thing. I mean, it's way too early to tell, but this could end up being a pretty significant move if it takes him away from the day-to-day of creative in WWE. And I think for that reason alone, this could turn out to be a positive. Whatever he does, football, basketball, let him buy a cricket team, I don't give a shit. Maybe that's for the best, right? Isn't that what people want? Isn't that what people keep saying? Oh, this guy's too old. He's out of touch. We got to get him out of there. Well, maybe this is the first step. By the way, that blogger, Brad Shepard, he also tweeted something else out last night. There were two quote-unquote exclusives. And still, we'll see if the XFL thing bears fruit or if it turns out to be, you know, to have no merit whatsoever and this is all much ado about nothing. But he posted another tweet, and in this one, he tweeted what he claims is the current WWE Hall of Fame class, the planned Hall of Fame class for 2018. According to him, the Hall of Fame class at this point is scheduled to be headlined by Bill Goldberg. And we'll also include Bam Bam Bigelow, Ivory, the Dudley Boys, and Kid Rock as the celebrity inductee. And I mention this here because if the XFL stuff does turn out to be true, then this Hall of Fame tweet may also be true. Plus, it's also fun, I think, to talk about that as a potential Hall of Fame class. And look, I mean, if Undertaker is not going in this year, then Goldberg makes sense. You know, he's back in their good graces. He's one of the few big names they have left who they could actually headline a Hall of Fame class with. Bam Bam, I think, deserves to be recognized. I think in a lot of ways he's kind of underrated. And part of that is just he never got to a high enough level. I mean, yeah, he was in a WrestleMania main event, but so what? I mean, just, you know, there's a lot of people who have been in WrestleMania main events who aren't, you know, at an elite level. All due respect, I like King Kong Bundy. I was a Bundaholic when, you know, I was younger, but King Kong Bundy, I would not look at him as an elite athlete, you know, and he has a WrestleMania main event to his name. You know, Psycho Sid, The Miz, all these different people. Actually, I shouldn't say that about The Miz. I have come around as a fan of The Miz, although seeing him at a, quote, elite level, like the top names, I still think that's a bit of a stretch. But I think Bam Bam is a fine inductee if he were to go into the Hall of Fame. And he worked in a lot of different places, WWE, obviously WCW, he worked there, ECW. So all the key places, Japan, he worked there as well. The Dudleys, I mean, that goes without saying. You know, the Dudleys will go down as one of the great teams of all time and certainly worthy of a Hall of Fame recognition. Ivory, you know, Ivory's fine. Ivory worked in GLOW, right, originally, the original GLOW, and had a run many years later in WWE. So as far as getting a female inductee in there, I have no problem with that. That's fine. Kid Rock, I could not possibly care less about Kid Rock. I just don't give a shit. So that's my thoughts on Kid Rock. So we'll see. We'll see if that Hall of Fame class ends up. But look, even if that is the current plan for the Hall of Fame, this stuff changes so often. It's only December. They're not even going to announce the first Hall of Fame name until around Royal Rumble time. And I'm almost sure that they will change their mind. They'll probably add another name. I mean, as it stands, if that is the Hall of Fame class, I do think, you know, while you can make a case for all of them, you know, going into the Hall of Fame, I still think that looks pretty weak. It seems like a pretty weak Hall of Fame class. But we'll see. You know, but Goldberg headlining, if Undertaker's not going in, if Rock is not going in, then Goldberg makes a lot of sense. Chris Jericho attacked Kenny Omega at the New Japan World Tag League Finals. Great angle that they did. Another Jericho video aired up on the screen. Nobody knew he was actually there. When the lights came back on, he was in the ring standing behind Omega. Omega turned around. Jericho attacked him. Ended up hitting him with the U.S. title, busting him open. Just a really, you know, good, solid angle to put some heat on this match going into Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th. First time they've had any sort of physical interaction together. Nobody saw it coming. Also, in that angle, he gave Don Callis, who does the American announcing along with Kevin Kelly for New Japan, obviously very good friends with Jericho, helped broker this whole deal. If you listen to Jericho tell the story, this really was Don Callis' idea. That's how this whole thing came about over the summer. Callis got in the ring. He was telling him, save it for the dome, save it for the dome. And Jericho gave him a code breaker, and he did the Vince McMahon stunner sell, sort of flopped around a little bit like a fish. And they did an injury angle where he got stretchered out. He had a neck brace put around his neck. In fact, he was selling it at the airport. There were pictures of Kevin Kelly wheeling him in a wheelchair while in a neck brace around the airport. So for those of you who are fans of kayfabe is alive, barely breathing, but it is alive in some small way. That very next night, they had a press conference for Wrestle Kingdom. Kenny Omega spoke about the match with Jericho. He left. Jericho came out. He was talking about the match when Kenny Omega jumped him. And they did a very quick scuffle between the two. They got separated. Jericho was all freaking out. Cut a promo on Omega. He even called one of the reporters a fuckface. Just going nuts. So I really dig it. I mean, it's a match between two, big names in wrestling. Jericho, you know, as far as him being a top star, I think his time has come and gone. He's, you know, obviously older now. He's not the number one guy in WWE and hasn't been for a while. But he's not too far removed from being one of the top, I'd say, five guys in the company. You know, the whole angle with him and Kevin Owens was very well done. The Festival of Friendship. And that really wasn't that long ago. That was only earlier this year. Jericho was in a feature role in WWE. So you could say he's older, which he is. You could say he's lost a step, which he probably has. But you know what? He's still one of the biggest stars out there. He's still one of the biggest names that they have. And for him to be doing a match like this against Kenny Omega, nobody could have predicted that this would be happening this soon. People thought, hey, maybe they'll do something on the Jericho Cruise next October. Then we find out they're doing a match at one of the biggest shows of the year in, what, a month? Month and a half later, right? When this thing first started? So that's a pretty big deal, and I think they've done a very good job of creating, you know, a personal issue between these two guys, and I'm amped up. I'm really looking forward. I mean, I'm looking forward to Wrestle Kingdom anyway, because I'm sure they're going to, usually Wrestle Kingdom, you can pretty safely bet it will end up, if not being the show of the year, it certainly will be in contention for show of the year. You're going to get a lot of great action up and down the card. So I've been a big fan of what they've done so far. They are promoting this match as a co-main event on the show. This is one of the co-main events, according to New Japan. The other main event, of course, being Okada and Naito for the IWGP Championship, which is the real main event. But it's very obvious that what they want to do here with this Jericho-Omega match, I mean, as I see it, they want to temper people's expectations. They don't want people going into this, I think, thinking that this is going to be the traditional New Japan, you know, 4-star match, 5-star match, 6-star match, whatever, with the whole star shit. There is a certain expectation, I think, for people that they have for these big New Japan matches. And I don't think Jericho is really in a position necessarily to deliver in the way that a lot of the top guys in New Japan are. And I think he recognizes that. And I think they've been very, very smart in how they've handled this, because now this is not a wrestling match. All of a sudden, this is a personal grudge match. This is a personal, like, literally a blood feud, because blood has already been spilled here in this angle. So people now know going into this, this is not a match so much as it is a fight. And there may be chairs thrown and tables involved and, you know, stuff that you might expect to see maybe in a Jericho match in WWE. This is not going to be what you got with Omega and Okada. This is going to be a very different kind of match. And I think that's very smart to sort of temper people's expectations. Now, Jericho was on Don Callis' podcast. He has a podcast with Lance Storm called Killing the Town. And Jericho was talking about this angle. And, you know, now I want to read you part of what Jericho said about getting blood when he attacked Omega in the attack that I mentioned earlier. This is what he said on the podcast about this. He said, we can't do that in WWE anymore. You're not allowed to get color. Anybody in the business knows this. When you get color, it takes things to a different level. Because we're not allowed to do that anymore, it puts it in a completely different universe. And then to see that actual color, the Crimson Mask, dude, that to me was the greatest moment in my career in the last 10 years. Because it was real and it adds to the whole drama, and we're not allowed to do that in the world that I come from. Tonight was a real money-making angle, and tonight I said to Gato, the boss, he says the boss of New Japan, who used to be my tag team partner, I said to him, we sold tickets tonight. Now, Wrestle Kingdom was already selling plenty of tickets. Apparently, they were well ahead of where they were last year, even before this match was announced. So I have no doubt that, you know, after this match was announced, they probably sold a shitload of more tickets. But he's right. And I've said that before. You know, when you have an angle where somebody gets busted wide open, because we don't get to see that a lot in WWE, I mean, the blood that we see largely now in WWE is hard way. I mean, whether guys are trying to get themselves cut open, or they're just being too stiff, or they're just being too careless, I don't know. We've seen a lot of blood in WWE, I feel like, in the last several months, but it's been sort of, you know, accidental blood. Except, I think, for that Vince McMahon headbutt that he took from Kevin Owens. That was a little too convenient to think it was anything other than him intentionally busting himself, or like pre-blading. I think there was a lot of talk about him possibly having cut himself before he went out there, but in any event, it is not something that we are used to seeing a lot, so I think Jericho, he's absolutely right about that. Now, him going out of his way to say that this was the best thing he did in wrestling in 10 years, that's, you know, a pretty bold statement for him to make, because he seemed pretty happy with the whole angle with Owens and the Festival of Friendship and the list, and, you know, look, he did a lot of quality stuff in the last year, year and a half. Seems like every time he comes back, you get the same people bitching about the fact, oh, it's Jericho, he's doing the same shtick, he's too old, this and that. But you know what? You got to give the guy credit. Every time he comes back, in some way, he changes his whole shtick. You know, he reinvents himself in some way. Whether he's a babyface, whether he's a heel. And I can't stand Jericho as a babyface. I am way more of a fan of his when he's a heel than as a babyface. That's just me personally. But I give the guy a lot of credit. He's smart enough to realize that he can't just come back and do the same old shit, so he always tries something different, you know? And this guy got a freaking list and a potted plant and a scarf and all this stuff. He got, you know, he got over. You know, he made that stuff popular. He could probably take a pencil and call it, you know, Pencil Pete or some shit like that, and probably get that over too, and they could start selling pencils for $12 a pop on WWE Shop and gouging the fans. I say that as somebody who once bought one Mr. Socko for $8. I'm not proud of it. It was one of the dumber things I've ever done, spending $8 on one sock. But that's what they do. And I thought that was very interesting to hear Jericho make that kind of a statement. Now, maybe he was just saying that to try to promote the match and he doesn't actually mean it. I think he does mean it. I think he's enjoying the hell out of this, and I think that even though he's saying this is a one-off, you know what? Let's see how the match goes at Wrestle Kingdom. I think if he's enjoying himself that much, this could turn into something more than just a one-off. So we'll see where that goes. But speaking of New Japan, Mark Cuban. I thought this was really cool. So Mark Cuban is the chairman of Access Television. Access Television airs New Japan Pro Wrestling on Friday nights every single week. They've got Jim Ross and Josh Barnett as the announcers. He is also a big wrestling fan. He once ate an RKO from Randy Orton, if you remember, at Survivor Series once upon a time. He has been a guest host, one of the celebrity guest hosts on Monday Night Raw. He was put through a table on that show by Sheamus. So he's taken some bumps. He's made some appearances in WWE before. And, he's also, you know, worth about, what, $3 billion, I think? Oh, by the way. So he gave an interview to Sports Illustrated. He was saying that he is looking to invest more money into the New Japan show. He said that they're looking to expand the show on Friday nights. I don't know if that just means making it 2 hours instead of 1 hour. He didn't specify. But he says they want to do more live shows. They're currently in talks about doing special events. He says the numbers keep going up at a time when other TV shows are going in the opposite direction. He says the New Japan show is actually on the upswing. Some nights, it even beats their MMA programming. Wrestle Kingdom is January 4th, and Cuban says that what he has done, he has bought the rights to air the top three matches on the show on Access Television 2 days later, which is pretty quick turnaround. I mean, normally, I'm trying to think, they aired at least part of the show, I think, this year, but I want to say it was delayed by at least a week, maybe more. Coming back 2 days later with the top matches from the show on TV here in the States, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And he says it cost him a pretty penny. I guess he says it wasn't cheap, but it was a no-brainer. He says, I got to do it. So he spent the money, and he did it. Now, those matches will be Okada Naito, Jericho Omega, and the Tanahashi Jay White match. Those are the three matches that will air on Access. And I just, I read this and I thought to myself, this is fantastic for New Japan. It never hurts having a billionaire in your corner, especially, you know, at a time when you are trying to expand into a new market. Now, he did admit in this interview, he said, you know, Vince McMahon, he doesn't really see us as a threat. I think the phrase he used was little shits. I don't know if that's a direct quote that he got from Vince or what, but, you know, he said that, you know, look, Vince doesn't see us as a real threat because of the language barrier. And he's not wrong. I don't think he's wrong in saying that. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we can't have a really strong alternative in New Japan succeeding here in this country. It doesn't mean that New Japan can't make money and can't be a success, can't expand their audience, maybe get more people to buy, you know, New Japan World. They can do all of those things. And have a healthy New Japan and a strong New Japan, I think, having that is the best thing for the wrestling business. Having an American star. Well, I guess he's Canadian, but... so, call him whatever you want. Having somebody like Kenny Omega as the face of their expansion was very, very smart. Bringing in an established name like Chris Jericho to work a match there is very, very smart. He's got a lot of name ID with wrestling fans. People know who he is. Still a big name. And don't think that the thought has not crossed WWE's mind that Daniel Bryan, should they let him walk next year, might just walk into New Japan. And all of a sudden, he becomes the face, or one of the faces maybe with Omega, as part of their American expansion. I mean, look, if I'm New Japan, I'm waiting, I'm waiting with bated breath for this guy's contract to be up. Are you kidding me? That's the first call I make. Although I have my own thoughts on what's going to happen with Bryan, which is actually I may as well talk about it now. That is the perfect segue to WWE Clash of Champions. Clash of Champions is tomorrow night. I am recording this on Saturday. So Sunday night, live from Boston, is Clash of Champions, the final pay-per-view of the year. It is a SmackDown Live show. I will give my thoughts on the show from Tuesday as we go along here. I'll just incorporate my thoughts from the go-home show as we move through this here. Not for nothing, I thought SmackDown sucked this week, and I have next to no interest in this pay-per-view tonight. It's a show. It's the best way I could describe it. It's not... There are some matches I think that could be really good, and it's not the worst show of the year on paper, but it's a show. They should call it that. That should be the name of a new pay-per-view. WWE presents a show. And if they had a show like that, this would be it. Because that's all this is. You know, Clash of Champions. Remember when they actually tried to make Clash of Champions an important show? It's Clash of Champions, and the real main event of this show is a tag team match with no title on the line. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So let's go through this here. The kickoff show has Mojo Rawley facing his former tag team partner, Zack Ryder. No reason for Mojo not to win here. I mean, unless they have Zack win and Mojo kind of loses his mind and they do an injury angle or something. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Mojo Rawley gets the win, as he should. We have the Bludgeon Brothers against Breezango. First real competition that Harper and Rowan have had since their return. I don't think the outcome is in any doubt here. This should be a very quick win for the Bludgeon Brothers. If this match goes longer than 2 minutes, they're doing something wrong. And I know people like Breezango. I like Breezango. You know, I'm entertained by the Fashion Files. It doesn't matter. These guys should be demolished. 2 minutes or less. This match should be over. They had the Bludgeon Brothers on TV on Tuesday. They had them beat Colin Delaney and Joe Monroe. And if the name Colin Delaney sounds familiar, there's a good reason for that. It is the same Colin Delaney who got a push for about 10 seconds when ECW was on Sci-Fi. So it's very interesting seeing him here. He finally put on some weight. So instead of weighing about 102 pounds, now he weighs about 112, so that's good to see. He's got a beard now. It's been 10 years. When I saw that mentioned somewhere, and I'm like, it couldn't be that long. And I thought about it, I'm like, you know what? Yeah, it was probably about 2007 or so. 10 years since we last saw this guy on TV. He lost, so some things never change. His partner also let out this primal scream when Harper and Rowan picked him up for a powerbomb. It's like, what the fuck was that? Dude sounded like Prince singing, don't have to be rich. This is the best part of the entire show. I swear, like, you look at the people in the front row, or people, like, applauding. I swear that was the best thing that happened on that show on Tuesday. We have the Usos, The New Day, Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin, and Aiden English and Rusev in a fatal four-way, of course, for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. Tomorrow night, by the way, happens to be Rusev Day. So perhaps that will bring great luck and great fortune to Aiden English and Rusev. I don't think it will, because as much as I'd love to see them win it, I just don't see it happening. They've now won 2 weeks in a row on TV. 2 weeks ago, they beat Woods and Big E. And this week, they beat the Usos in a non-title match. 3 wins in a row? I don't think so. I think the Usos retain. So they're my pick. But I think this will probably end up being the sleeper match of the night. Baron Corbin defends his United States Championship in a triple threat match against Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. I figure Ziggler is in there to eat the fall. Probably the same way Kane is likely eating the fall at the Royal Rumble, assuming that ends up as a three-way, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. Multi-man mania running wild in WWE. Corbin and Ziggler, they went about 90 seconds on Tuesday before Roode ran in. He was sitting at the announce desk. He ran in. He laid them both out with the glorious DDT. They have managed to get me to not care at all about Bobby Roode, so congratulations. He's been babyface a lot longer than I thought. I don't know why they brought him in as a babyface, and I figured, well, okay, maybe it's just for a little bit, and you know, they'll turn him pretty quickly. But nope, he's still a babyface, and people cheer for the song, and that's about it. And I have seen absolutely nothing from this guy that has entertained me the way that he entertained me when he was in TNA, or that has entertained me the way that even when he was champion in NXT. Because I've been a Bobby Roode fan for a while. I still like the guy. But he's not really doing anything for me at the moment. And Dolph Ziggler is the definition of somebody who ain't doing nothing for me. I mean, talk about not caring about somebody. So, as you might imagine, I don't really care much about this match at all. I think Corbin is retaining. Whoever wins, who cares? Charlotte defends her SmackDown Women's title in her never-ending feud with Natalya. It is a lumberjack match. I was done with this feud about a month ago. I guess they're tying up loose ends here. At least I hope they are. I hope they're not planning on putting the belt back on Natalya. Charlotte wrestled Ruby Riott on Tuesday. There was a DQ finish after Natty hit Charlotte. Riott Squad tried to kill Charlotte after that with the steel ring steps, I should say. It's easy for me to say. So they were trying to do to her basically what they did to Naomi the week before, where they kind of crushed her under the ring steps when who should return but Naomi herself. And I actually thought this was really cool. Naomi was on fire here. She ran down to the ring. She gave basically like a shotgun drop kick to Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan, knocked them down, went in the ring, beat the hell out of Ruby Riott, hit the rear view. Crowd went wild when Naomi was pummeling Ruby. So I have Charlotte retaining here, and I think what's going to happen is you're going to have some situation where all the Lumberjacks are fighting amongst themselves. Maybe they even fight to the back. I think Carmella is going to be the one who stays behind. I think Carmella is going to see her opportunity, and I think she's going to cash in her Money in the Bank contract on Charlotte, and I think she's going to win. And I think Carmella is going to walk out with that championship. So that's my prediction. We have AJ Styles and Jinder Mahal for the WWE Championship. There's going to be a lot of people watching this match holding their breath because as obvious as it seems that AJ Styles should win and probably will win, I put nothing past these people. Jinder Mahal lost the championship to AJ last month. He was taken out of the match with Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series, I was hoping, because they just came to their senses. He lost in India a few weeks ago to Triple H, which in and of itself means nothing. For everybody using that as an excuse, well, he lost to Triple H, so obviously that means he's going to lose, or obviously that means he's now going to win. It doesn't mean shit. It was a friggin' house show. It means nothing. But, yeah, it was a house show, but they did put that footage up on YouTube. They aired some of it, I think, even on TV. So it's not like they were hiding it from people. I still don't think it's going to mean anything. So if you're trying to make a prediction on this match based on that, don't. I just think if we go by logic and common sense, which I know is not their first language, there is absolutely no reason to take that championship off of AJ Styles. If they take that championship off of AJ and they put this back on Jinder because they want Jinder to go to WrestleMania and drop the title to Nakamura or to John Cena or whoever, that is a terrible idea, which means there's a 50-50 chance they might do it. In the end, I think they'll do the right thing. I think AJ Styles should be a no-brainer. I think he is going to win. He is going to retain. And hopefully that will spell the end of Jinder Mahal here in these pay-per-view championship matches, pay-per-view main event matches. I don't think this is going on last. I could be wrong, but I think this will probably end up going either third to last or, you know, if I had to make a prediction, I would say that there's a chance this goes on third to last and they'll put the Bludgeon Brothers thing against Breezango maybe in between that and the tag team main event just to sort of put something between them. But call it whatever you want, main event or not, I think AJ retains, and hopefully that spells the end of Jinder in these matches, and I don't mind Jinder anywhere else on the card. I don't want to see the guy fired, I don't want to see the guy, you know, demoted off of television. I mean, I don't really care either way, it's not like I'm clamoring to see him on TV every week. I don't wish ill upon him, you know, the dude worked hard, but everybody works hard. I mean, I've seen people defend Jinder and say, oh, the guy works hard. Guy works hard. So what? So what? I work hard. You work hard. Doesn't mean I should be the president of the company where I work. AJ works hard. Right? What does that mean? He works hard. So what? You're going to have to come up with a better excuse than that. He had his run. He had 6 months. And that was probably six too many. Now, maybe if they have him go do something for the U.S. title, him and Bobby Roode, if Roode ends up winning the championship at some point, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But him wrestling for the world title, him wrestling in these pay-per-view main event level matches, absolutely not. It was a failure. And still, he has yet to have a match that I can look at and say, wow, that was actually a really fun match. Or, wow, that was actually a really good match. Maybe tomorrow night, the streak will end. Maybe he'll go in there with AJ. He'll be extra motivated. They'll have 15 minutes to go out there and they'll have an excellent match. I'm not going to hold my breath on that, but I've yet to see it. And that brings us to the real main event. Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura team up to take on Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn with Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan as dueling guest referees. And if Owens and Zayn lose, the stipulation is that not only are they fired from SmackDown, they are gone from WWE, which means they cannot just run off to Monday Night Raw. Now, I don't know if that includes NXT. I guess technically it would. It would be kind of funny, actually, if Owens and Zayn went back to NXT. You know what? I wouldn't mind that. If they actually, as part of the storyline, sent them to, or they kind of came crawling back to NXT, begging William Regal for a job, and they actually put them on there for a few weeks, I think that could be kind of fun. So I wouldn't necessarily mind that. But I don't think they're losing, so I don't think there'll be a need for that. On Tuesday, Owens and Zayn came out with parody Yes t-shirts that said Yep on them, like they're jumping Jeff Farmer. The Yep movement, they were trying to push this now. Daniel Bryan came out, said he wants to make sure that Owens and Zayn get a fair shake at Clash of Champions. He wants them to be able to go out there and prove that they belong. So he appointed himself as the second special referee for the tag team match. I, as I'm sure many of you could probably see coming, I would predict a ref bump probably for Shane, right? Probably not going to bump Brian, so ref bump for Shane leads to Brian counting the fall for Owens and Zayn, saving their jobs, and officially creating an issue, because it's been bubbling up now for a few months, but this, I think, will finally kind of take us to the next chapter of whatever the story is that they're trying to tell us between Brian and Shane. This will create an issue between them, and I think it will lead to a match between them at WrestleMania. You know, I'm not going to pussyfoot around this anymore. I have no idea. I have no evidence of this. I have no insider knowledge of this. I'm watching this week to week. I'm seeing where this is going, and it's the only thing that makes sense, is that this is eventually leading to a match between Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. And WrestleMania would seem like the most likely destination for it. There it is. I'm putting that out there right now. There's no other way for this to end. I think it's a relatively safe match for Bryan to have. You know, if it is his first one back in a few years, see how that goes. If all goes well, it could lead to more. And it could lead to him staying and re-signing with WWE. Believe me, they don't want to let this guy walk. He's made it very clear what his intentions are if they don't let him wrestle again. And I think that the ultimate decision is in the hands of Dr. Maroon. I mean, they've made that very clear. It's if it were up to WWE, he'd be back. It's all on Dr. Maroon. He's their official doctor. And if he says, hey, it's okay, we'll let this happen, then they'll let him wrestle. This is not a Vince McMahon call. This is a Dr. Maroon call. And the guy is human. The guy can be swayed. Not saying it's a done deal, but I, you know, think they're building in that direction. Something is going to happen. Some decision is going to be made very soon. And my sense is that we will see him back in the ring for sure. But I think we'll see him back in the ring in WWE. And I think Brian Shane will happen at some point. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw, even though I kind of don't want to. Because of this main event stuff. There actually was some really good stuff on the show from Monday, but it's just, you know, the end of this friggin' show. First of all, the poll. And I could tell that you guys also weren't a big fan of what happened at the end of the show. Some of you didn't like the show at all. I wouldn't go that far because there was some good wrestling on the show, but about 2,000 votes, 36% thumbs up, 64% thumbs down. That is no bueno. Kane and Braun Strowman, they were in the main event to determine who would face Brock Lesnar for the Universal title at the Royal Rumble. This was boring. That's a good word for it. Didn't go very long. I didn't even think it went 5 minutes. This was boring. And the dialogue. Oh my God, the dialogue leading up to this. And I'm talking Kane. I'm not even talking Strowman. I don't even remember what Strowman said. I just remember what Kane said. And they tweeted it out, too, like they were proud of it. They were proud of this. They have Kane in the back. He's doing a backstage promo. This is what he said. Word for word. Okay? Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face. What do they think this is? Shakespeare? You know, I was driving yesterday. I don't even remember where I was going. I was driving yesterday, and I'm in a service lane. And some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. You have to be a special kind of asshole to do something like that. You should have heard the promo that I cut on this guy in my car as I'm sitting there honking the shit out of my horn. And no, that is not a euphemism for something else. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's, you know, smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial. Yeah, I liked it better when Kane didn't speak. Remember those days? Those were the days, man. Those were the days. Kane didn't say a word. He just nodded. He beat the fuck out of people. He made things blow up. He set people on fire. That's the Kane that I miss. Can we go back to that? So they brawled into the crowd. Strowman tackled Kane through the barricade. Both men were counted out Ooh, how exciting. They got counted out. And I think in the bulletin board of bad finishes, this one is pretty high up on the list. So they continued to fight. Strowman ended up giving Kane a running power slam through a table to end the show. And they certainly left you with the impression, if you've watched WWE for longer than 2 weeks in your lifetime, they certainly left you with the impression that we're going to get a triple threat match at the Royal Rumble next month with Braun Strowman, Kane, and Brock Lesnar. And I think of all the scenarios involving these three guys, that actually is the one that makes the most sense, but that doesn't make it a match I want to see. Because if they do, let's say, Kane against Lesnar one-on-one as a singles match, that sounds about as fun as a root canal without the Novocaine, right? And actually, I just realized that they missed a huge opportunity to put Nova and Kane together as a tag team back in the day instead of having him do the Simon Dean shtick. It's too bad. Lesnar one-on-one against Strowman. We just saw that and Strowman lost, just like he would lose now, and I don't want to see him lose again. So what do you do? What do you do? Well, you have Kane be the fall guy. You do a three-way and you have Kane be the fall guy. But just the idea that the first pay-per-view of 2018 may have Kane in a championship match. It is so backwards. It's just insane. I'm not even saying there's no role for him on the show. I don't hate Kane. I hate Kane being in a championship match on a pay-per-view. Meanwhile, you got Finn Balor, who spent the last 2 weeks wrestling Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. By the way, I don't want to see Finn Balor in that match either. They've killed that. Any interest I may have had in that match is dead. Done. Finished. The way that they've done nothing with this guy for 2 months. Of course, they can't just put him now in a championship match with Brock Lesnar. They've certainly killed that off. So they've succeeded in doing that. I would have felt differently 2 months ago. What they've had Balor doing the last 2 weeks, wrestling Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. Remember when they had him pin AJ Styles on pay-per-view 2 months ago? Remember that? Pepperidge Farm remembers. Anyway, we had Jason Jordan very upset, kind of like I am right now, that Kurt Angle would not give him a match against Samoa Joe here on the show. Instead, it was Joe against Dean Ambrose, who appears to be working at half speed. Maybe he's still worn out from his honeymoon. At least that I can understand. But this has been a problem for longer than a week. I don't know if I'm the only one to pick up on this, but you know, I watch Ambrose lately, and he just looks like he's going through the motions. I don't know what's up with this. He looks smaller, too. He looks... I don't want to say he looks frail, but he looks, I don't know, skinnier? I don't know, something's going on with this guy. Jordan watched the match from the stage. He came down to the ring during the match. He ended up costing Ambrose the match when he clearly had the match won. Referee was distracted at the time. He was busy arguing with Jordan on the outside. So Ambrose went up to him. He confronted him about it. Meanwhile, Samoa Joe comes out of the ring like a bat out of hell, knocks them both down, puts Ambrose in the ring, chokes him out. So now Dean Ambrose is pissed at Jason Jordan. I think everybody is pissed at Jason Jordan. Soon, Kurt Angle will be pissed at Jason Jordan, and that's when we're going to find out if Jordan will sink or swim as a heel. It's going to be make or break time for him at that point. I mean, we know he can go in the ring. He's a good wrestler. Character-wise, he's proven nothing yet, but he does seem at least to be getting more comfortable in this role, which is good. But the real test for him, I think, is coming up pretty soon. Seth Rollins pinned Sheamus. They had a good match. Roman Reigns pinned Cesaro in an excellent match for the Intercontinental title. Great stuff. Yeah, I look at Cesaro, and I just think, you hear that expression, the cream rises to the top, which is kind of bullshit because that's not always true. But you have to think, you have to hope at some point that these people will realize that this guy could be doing so much more than they have him doing right now. You hope. You know, he's in a good spot right now, him and Sheamus, tag team champs. You know, he's getting TV time every single week. That's all well and good. I'd like to see him doing more at some point. I hope they see it the same way. That's all I can say. I hope they see it the same way. You know, we're going to be in New Orleans again for WrestleMania next year. And it's going to be 4 years. Jesus Christ. 4 years. Is it really 4 years? Yeah, I guess it would be. WrestleMania at the Superdome when he won the Andre Battle Royal 4 years ago. That was one of the great moments of that show. When he picked up Big Show for the body slam and threw him out of the ring, place came unglued. It was 4 years ago. I don't know. I just hope it's not another 4 years and we see him doing tag team matches. Let's see here. They never mentioned Rich Swann's arrest or the fact that he's been suspended. I thought they could have at least mentioned that he was suspended. Unless, maybe they did and I missed it. They sure as hell didn't mention the fact that he was arrested. They said his chance to earn a Cruiserweight Championship match has been rescinded. Indeed, it has been rescinded by the Gainesville Police Department. No update on that either, by the way. There's been no... I think he was released, but beyond that, there's really been no new news as far as Rich Swann goes. Instead, they did what I figured they would. They had... Wait for it. Wait for it. You know what's coming. They had a fatal four-way with Cedric Alexander beating Tony Nese, Mustafa Ali, and Arya Daivari. So now he will challenge Drew Gulak on Monday night for the right to face Enzo Amore for the Cruiserweight title. One more thing to mention from Raw, and that is the follow-up to the Bray Wyatt, Matt Hardy stuff. Big fan of what they did the week before. I was very entertained by that. Less so this week, but I'm not going to shit on it because see where they go. People were complaining to Matt on his Facebook page about it. They said, hey, this was exactly what you did the week before. You did dueling promos up on the big screen. Only what they did this week was they put this special effect in. So every time they would cut back to Hardy, you would hear glass shatter. It would say, like, I guess it said woken instead of broken. But the glass would shatter on your screen. And then Matt would speak. But they went back and forth. And they did that about, like, half a dozen times. By the final time, I'm like, all right, I get the point. Enough already. You know what I mean? They're trying to... I don't know. I feel like they're trying a little too hard. They're trying a little too hard. But Matt responded to somebody who was complaining on his Facebook page. And he said, I told two very different and delightful stories in these two appearances. You'll have to follow closely as the Great War rages on. An abundance of information will be divulged in the next few weeks. So I don't know if that means we're going to get more dueling promos every single week. I'd like to see them change it up and just do something different and have Matt doing other things and not just him on the big screen. But I am curious to see where they go with this and what the payoff is, what kind of match he and Bray have. I've heard rumors that maybe they'll do another Wyatt family compound type match where they go off-site somewhere. Now, I thought the House of Horrors match that Wyatt did with Randy Orton was... I mean, I appreciated the fact that they at least tried something different. I mean, people kind of shit all over it. It wasn't great. But they also did a Wyatt family compound brawl once. I think it was... Was it the New Day, right? I think it was the New Day against the Wyatts, and it was from their compound. I mean, I personally like it when they do stuff like that. I like it when they go to, you know, some remote location. It's just WWE has a tendency to cheese things up a little too much. But the whole essence of the Matt Hardy character is nothing but cheese. I mean, that's really what this is. And I'm lactose intolerant. So, sucks for me. But, you know, I'm not going to shit on this, man. I mean, I'm just happy that they're finally trying this. Now, if 6 weeks from now, I'm sitting here reviewing this, and I'm reviewing the same exact segment that they did on week one... Yeah, I'm going to have a problem with that. I'll take Matt at his word, though. If Matt has the creative freedom over this that we read that he had, and who knows, it was never confirmed, but you know, the belief was that Vince was a big fan of the Woken character, and he trusts Matt Hardy, he's going to allow Matt Hardy to have a certain level of creative license with this, then I put my faith and trust in Matt that he knows what he's doing, and you know, this will go in a direction that'll end up being a lot of fun. But, I mean, as far as the segment itself, they really just went back and forth. The dialogue was a little bit different. But when the segment was over, it felt like a rehash of what they had done the week before. So I think that's why people, you know, had an issue with it. But keep in mind, if you believe the rumors and the reports that Matt has a certain level of creative control over this... You can't shit on WWE. You can't have it both ways. You either believe that he does have some creative freedom over this, and if you didn't like the segment, then you hold him to account for it, or you don't believe the rumors in the first place and you want to blame WWE, then fine, go ahead and blame WWE. You can't have it both ways. You can't buy into the fact that, oh, this is great, they gave Matt all this freedom, and then watch the segment, not like it, and say, oh, I knew WWE would screw it up. It's like, you can't do that. You know what I mean? You can't have it both ways. I mentioned a story from Pro Wrestling Sheet a few weeks ago about a new WWE show in the works for Facebook, some kind of a mixed tag team challenge concept. Well, this week, the official announcement came down from WWE that beginning January 16th at 10 p.m., after SmackDown Live goes off the air, they will be airing a new show on Facebook called WWE Mixed Match Challenge. It will be streaming live here in the U.S. exclusively on Facebook. I don't know if that means U.S. only or if you can also watch it internationally. I don't know. But it will run for 12 weeks, 20-minute episodes with stars from Raw and SmackDown in a single elimination mixed tag team tournament with the winners earning $100,000 to the charity of their choice. Fans are going to be able to vote on what matches they want to see, match stipulations. So, you know, basically borrowing from the whole Taboo Tuesday, Cyber Sunday concept. So here's a list of the participating names from each roster. Teams are going to be chosen on January 4th. There will be one mystery fan pick from the Raw roster and one fan pick from the SmackDown roster. It's going to be limited to one of the three members of New Day. So the names from Raw include Alexa Bliss, Alicia Fox, Asuka, Bayley, Braun Strowman, Enzo Amore, Finn Balor, Goldust, Nia Jax, Sasha Banks, and The Miz. And from SmackDown, Becky Lynch, Bobby Roode, Carmella, Charlotte, Jimmy Uso, Lana, Naomi, Natalia, Rusev. So maybe we'll get a Rusev-Lana team. By the way, you need to watch those two on the Ride Along, the new Ride Along episode that went up on the network this week. If they don't give Rusev his, you know, they want to boost network subscriptions, they need to give Rusev his own show. I don't even know the concept. I haven't thought this through yet. I don't care what it is. They have to give him his own show. He's just fantastic. Anyway, Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura are the final two names. I saw people bashing WWE for putting Sami's name on the list. Like, it somehow gives away the finish of the pay-per-view match this weekend. It doesn't give away anything. I mean, I'm sure he and Owens are going to win, but even if he loses, they'll just replace him with someone else. It's like, I see people talking like it's somehow, it's a spoiler, or like, you know, it's set in stone that Sami Zayn must be part of the show. Oh, his name was announced. These are not stone tablets. These were not commandments that, you know, Daniel Bryan and Kurt Angle brought down from some great mountain. You know what I mean? It's like, of all the things to criticize WWE for, I think that one is pretty low on the list. But anyway, the show, I think the show sounds like a fun concept. It's only 20 minutes, which I love. I wish Raw was 20 minutes. Sometimes I watch Raw in 20 minutes. So I think the length is perfect. The money goes to charity. I see nothing wrong with this. For those who care, by the way, for those 12 weeks, 205 Live, which usually airs right after SmackDown goes off the air, they're going to push that back to 10:30. Instead of 10, they're just going to bump it back half an hour.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT on USA Network on Wednesday did 841,000 viewers in the 7 p.m. slot. I think they have to be happy with that number, all things considered. It was a weird slot, too. I don't know why 7 o'clock instead of 8, since Raw starts at 8 and SmackDown starts at 8. But the key is that it was the highest-rated show on USA Network all day, and that includes Mr. Robot. NXT did almost double what the Mr. Robot season finale did later that night. That's another show, by the way, that people keep telling me to watch. I have that on my list of things to get to at some point, TV shows. But I watched the network version, not the USA version. Apparently, the Ember Moon-Peyton Royce match was left off the USA version. I would guess due to all the commercials, they just didn't have time. The commercials are one of the reasons I didn't bother watching the USA version, honestly. I just didn't see there being a need. I loved the Andrade Cien Almas-Fabian Aichner match. It was very short. There really wasn't a whole lot to it. But I thought Fabian Aichner looked fantastic here in this match. In fact, he has looked great in all of his appearances, and he hasn't made that many, but he has looked great, I think, in all the appearances that he's made in NXT ever since the Cruiserweight Classic, and he looked good there too. I mean, do we even know if he's signed? I have no idea if he's officially signed with them or not. I don't think he is, but I don't know that for sure. If he is not, I think it's about time they have that conversation. He's an impressive guy. You know, he pulled off this running springboard plancha off the top rope. He kind of balanced himself first on the top rope, then jumped off onto Almas. A guy that big coming at you from that height, I'd have shit my pants if that were me. But this was one of those matches, I think, where the loser comes out looking like a winner. You know, Almas won with the hammerlock DDT, but it did not come easy. It was a challenge. He had a fight for it. Authors of Pain beat Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. Super Collider. Then the last chapter to Burch for the pin. There really is nothing left for AOP on this show. I feel like they're just sort of biding their time now until a spot opens up for them on Mondays or Tuesdays. The Revival should be back very soon on Raw. Raw's going to get them back. So I think put AOP on SmackDown. You know, they've got some ready-made opponents there. The New Day, the Usos, you know, even Gable and Benjamin. Raw already has somebody rocking the flak jacket anyway on their TV show every week. Ember Moon pinned Peyton Royce. Non-title match. She hit the Eclipse. Got the pin. Again, this was a network exclusive. This did not air on USA. Billy and Peyton double-teamed Ember when the match was over until Nikki Cross ran in to make the save. And she stared at the title and then ran away. Main event was the Battle of the Undefeateds. Aleister Black taking on Adam Cole, with the winner advancing to the Fatal 4-Way. There's that phrase again. To determine a new number one contender for the NXT title. I think War Games aside, this was Adam Cole's best match. Not that he's had that many, but this was his best performance easily since coming to NXT, aside from the War Games match. Cole was trash-talking Aleister here at the finish. When he got hit out of nowhere with the Black Mask kick right in the face, knocked him out, got the pin. I think between this and the way that Dalton Castle hit his big move out of nowhere and pinned Cody on Friday night at the Ring of Honor show, I'm just not used to seeing these guys hitting their finisher once and then getting the pin. I've been so conditioned to expect everybody to kick out of everything. And look, Ring of Honor has as much to do with that becoming a thing as WWE. I think WWE just sort of followed Ring of Honor's lead. But I remember going to those early Ring of Honor shows in 2006, 2007, 2008. You would see it from the opening match right on down through the main event. You had guys in the opening match doing, you know, not just high spots, but all these spots where they would kick out of finishers. And these would be like 15-minute matches, and it would be over, and you'd be exhausted. And it was only the first match. I think Jim Cornette tried to nip that shit in the bud when he first came in. He was like, yeah, no, we're not doing that anymore. You got to save that for the main events. And he's not wrong. But I think we sort of become so conditioned to it over time that even just seeing a guy hit his finish and get a pin like that, even if it is against somebody like Adam Cole, who's one of the top names on the brand, it's kind of surprising. It was kind of surprising. I didn't, you know, see that coming. So I think it's going to take some time here to get used to that. So Aleister Black will join Johnny Gargano and Killian Dane in the Fatal 4-Way. There is one spot left open that will be determined, I guess, probably on TV this week. It'll be Lars Sullivan against Roderick Strong for the final spot. Also this Wednesday, two big title matches. Sanity defends the tag team titles against Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly. And the one that I'm looking forward to the most, Pete Dunne, defends his WWE UK title against Tyler Bate. It's coming up this Wednesday. This week's sad tweet. I think you guys know, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably know where I'm going with this one. This to me was a slam dunk. But I'm not going to shit on the guy the way that some people have shit on him. I have my own opinion on what TJ Perkins had to say this week about net neutrality on his Twitter page. So, yeah. The FCC, they voted this week to kill their net neutrality rules for the internet that were put into place 2 years ago under the previous administration. This guy, Ajit Pai, I guess that's how you pronounce his name. Ajit Pai is the new FCC commissioner. He actually was installed, I guess that's the right word for it, by Obama a few years ago, not as the commissioner. But, you know, he's been working for a few years now at the FCC, and under the new regime, he was promoted to the position of commissioner. And this is the same Ajit Pai who once worked for Verizon, which just so happens to be one of the major ISPs opposed, adamantly opposed, to net neutrality. Fancy that. It's funny how that works. So you look at this, and this vote, this 3-2 vote, you know, along party lines that they had here this week, and it's hard not to look at this and think the fix was in right from the word go. They had 22 million comments submitted from people wanting net neutrality rules to be maintained and to be kept in place. Now, even if a lot of those were fake, I think they said up to 7 million of them may have been fake accounts. You know, that's still 15 million people who submitted comments in favor of keeping net neutrality. It's a lot of people. I saw there were some polls that were done, as many as 80%+ of Americans on both sides of the aisle politically were opposed to the FCC's decision. Didn't matter. It never mattered. The fix was in. This was preordained from day one. These rules were put into place to block internet service providers like Verizon, like AT&T, like Comcast, from throttling you, for example, for viewing certain content and forcing other services to pay more to be able to deliver content at faster speeds, you know, at the expense of others. I mention all of this because sad tweet this week goes to TJ Perkins, who, before the vote on Thursday, said, "Everything I read about the benefits of saving net neutrality makes me want to save it even less." Now, this is coming from a man who wrestles on a show called 205 Live that airs exclusively on WWE's digital streaming network, which could be directly impacted by rolling back these net neutrality rules. And not in a good way. This is a company here in WWE, by the way, who cannibalized their pay-per-view business to put all of their big shows on their network. They banked it all on the WWE network. So it's not just 205 Live. The network for them is kind of a big deal. It's kind of an important thing. And so, you know, don't think for a second that they're not paying attention to all of this stuff that's going on. Because I got news for you. If we do ever get to the point where, you know, we have ISPs offering, let's say, speed packages that include specific services like Twitter and Netflix or Facebook and Hulu, WWE Network isn't going to be very high on the priority list for a lot of people who only have so much expendable income. If they have to spend it only on a few, like a handful of services, I'm willing to bet you that if they have, let's say, 1.5 million, I think is that what they have right now, total subscribers for WWE Network, that number is going to drop like a rock. If that day ever comes. No one's saying it will. Nobody knows for sure how things are going to play out. The whole point is, with these rules in place, it would have prevented something like that for sure from happening. That's really the kind of the crux of the issue here. Nobody is saying that because net neutrality rules have been, and this isn't even official yet, they just voted on it, but let's say it ends up becoming, you know, becoming law, becoming official. Nobody is saying that, you know, for sure, All of these doomsday scenarios are going to happen. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, oh my God, the sky is falling and this is going to happen and I can't do a podcast anymore and I can't watch Netflix movies anymore. I'm not saying that. But there are reasons why these rules were put into effect in the first place. There were things that were already starting to happen in 2013, 2014. We were kind of going down that road. Didn't feel like it necessarily, because maybe it didn't affect you directly, but it was starting to affect some people. There were things that were starting to happen, moves that were, you know, being made behind the scenes. Hence why these rules were put into place in the first place. Now, when it comes to podcasts like this one, in the near term, nothing will change. I don't see anything changing. But over time, it could. I'm paying attention to this. Been doing this podcast for 10 years. You bet your ass I'm paying attention to this. Especially when it comes to streaming clips on YouTube. You know, you may be listening right now. You may be listening to this clip on TV Tracks. You may be streaming it from your phone. Or, you know, all of the Sound Off extras and pay-per-view reviews that I host on my own YouTube channel. If you're somebody who does a lot of streaming, like if I did those four-hour anniversary streams, I did two of them this year. But if I was doing that every month, for example, you know, there absolutely could be an effect on me. If you are a content creator or if you are a content provider, this should worry you. And at the very least, pay attention to what's going on. Don't bury your head in the sand and think that it can't affect you, because it can and it will. Maybe not on day one. Maybe you're not day one-ish, but it will. Now, I saw TJP's other tweets. He was going back and forth with a whole bunch of people trying to state his argument and state his opinion. His argument seemed to be net neutrality rules were put into place in 2015, and before 2015, everything was just hunky-dory, so why all the fuss? But I was saying before, and I'm not going to list them all here, companies were already trying some sneaky shit. That's why, again, these rules were put into place in the first place. Now, his other argument is, if people were forced to pay extra to use services like Twitter and Facebook, and this is really what he got a lot of shit for, this argument here that he was trying to make. Well, if people had to pay extra for these services, it might cut down on the number of trolls and fake accounts and cyberbullying, and that's a great thing. Well, he and I can agree on that. It would be great to cut down on fake accounts on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely. But you're going to have to come up with a better reason than that to convince me that gutting net neutrality and trusting big, you know, conglomerates to do the right thing is actually a good thing. Because what scares me is the fact that more and more we're seeing these giant ISPs like Verizon and Comcast, like they're buying up media companies and content providers. More and more and more and more media consolidation is what we're hearing about every single week. And I don't know about you, but I don't feel comfortable trusting that these companies won't at some point turn around and throttle access to competing services just to benefit the ones that they own. Because if these companies are going out and they're spending millions upon millions of dollars to buy up these other companies, big and small, they're not doing that unless they want to, you know, in some way make sure that they are making money and they can, you know, succeed and turn a profit. And believe me, they're going to go out of the way to make sure that those services that they're paying for, that they're bringing into their media portfolio, are going to do well. That's in their best interest. But I think this is bad news if you're a smaller company. I think it's terrible news if you're a startup. And taking the, well, you can trust us approach, you know, that doesn't usually work out too well. In fact, in April, on the very day that the FCC announced its proposal, you know, that they were going to roll back these rules and this is why, wouldn't you know it, Comcast erased three of the key bullet points from its net neutrality page on its website, two of which explicitly stated that they would not throttle the speed at which content is delivered to you and I, and they would not prioritize internet traffic or create these so-called paid fast lanes. They were there before. That was their pledge. And the day the FCC went public with its plan, abracadabra, the pledge mysteriously vanished. Now, as far as TJ Perkins goes, yeah, he's absolutely entitled to his opinion. I'm not going to sit here and call him names. I'm not going to shit all over him. He's entitled to his opinion. So am I. He's also entitled to be wrong. I'm sure he was at home dabbing to the news when he found out about it. It may be a short-lived celebration. The lawsuits, predictably, have already begun. The Attorney General, I know here in New York, is leading a multi-state lawsuit challenging the decision, hoping to reverse the rollback. Now, my understanding is that the burden of proof is going to be on the FCC to prove in court that something changed since these rules were enacted in 2015. You know, that would necessitate them taking the action that they took here and doing what they did this week. I think that's going to be a tall order for them to prove that something significant changed in these 2 years that made it necessary for them to go ahead and take the action that they did, because there is no legitimate justification for them doing what they did this week and making it such a priority. It's like we keep hearing about this tax bill, and I'm sure people who live in other countries could give two shits about this, but it's kind of a big deal here in this country now. But, you know, this tax bill that's going to get passed this week, you know, when you hear about that, you hear sometimes on TV people saying, oh, you know, corporations are going to save all of this money on their taxes, and they're going to use it to boost wages, and they're going to create jobs, right? Just like we're all going to fart rainbows and ride unicorns to work every day. You hear that, and then you have, just a few weeks ago, the heads of Coca-Cola, Cisco, and Pfizer, who combined are probably worth, $500 billion combined, right? Three huge companies, Coca-Cola, Cisco, and Pfizer. You have the heads of these companies coming out publicly and saying, no, we're not. If we save all of this money, we're just going to give most of it back to our shareholders. No shit. Hey, you know what? At least they're honest. I'll say that much. At least they're honest. My bullshit detector has been working overtime these last few weeks. I'm going to have to take this thing in to have the battery changed. So this whole net neutrality thing is far from over. I think with all these lawsuits, if I were a betting man, and I'm not, but I would bet that this gets overturned, and I think net neutrality lives on. Which is not to say they won't try to eliminate it again at some point, but I think the real burden is going to be on the FCC here in court to prove that this was necessary, and I do think it's going to get overturned. I just think that, TJP, given the company he works for and the platform that he works on, I just think he's on the wrong side of the argument here. On a more lighthearted note, enough of that nonsense here. Let's talk about a different kind of tweet. Since that was sad tweet, we'll call this happy tweet, I guess. This comes from Chris Charlton, @ReasonJP is his handle on Twitter. I see that he covers a lot of New Japan stuff on his Twitter account. He posted a passage this week from Jushin Thunder Liger's autobiography. I don't know when it came out. I don't know if it's new, if it's old, but I just love this and I just wanted to share it here. So in the book, Liger is talking about he's giving his thoughts on social media and why he does not use social media. And this is what he said in his book. He says, I'm an analog person. I still have a flip phone. When the company told talent to be active on social media, they looked at me and said, you don't have to bother. I hear people say Twitter and Line, but I don't know which is which. And for the life of me, I don't understand why people take pictures of their food. You have that much time to waste? Eat your damn food while it's hot. And that, my friends, is why Jushin Thunder Liger is a legend. Not because of all the great matches that he's had. Not because of his long career. But because he's fucking fed up with people who take pictures of their food and post them on social media. This is probably the real reason why TJ Perkins wanted net neutrality dead. Alright, we're going to get to your mailbag questions now. Before I do, I want to mention one thing. This is something that somebody sent to me, a link to a YouTube video this week, and I just had to share this with everybody. So if you go to YouTube, when you're done listening to this, or right now, whenever you feel like it, go into the search bar, type in two words, Bingo Break. There's another wrestling podcast out there who apparently, they may have uploaded it themselves, but I know they talked about this already. There is a video. If you type in Bingo Break, it should be the first thing or one of the first things that comes up. It is a 20-plus minute episode of what looks like some cable access show. The production quality is not great, but it is an episode of a bingo show from April of 1994, and it is hosted by Gorilla Monsoon, or I should say co-hosted by Gorilla Monsoon. There's another lady, he has a female co-host, and Sean Mooney is almost like, he's sort of like the Ed McMahon to Johnny Carson, or the Andy Richter to Conan O'Brien. He's on the show assisting as well, and actually handling the bingo balls. And it is a televised version of bingo. Apparently, they tried to get this off the ground at least once. This was their version in the mid-90s of trying to get this off the ground. Obviously, it didn't go anywhere. I don't know how many episodes of this they filmed or if this was the one and only. But the air date on here. Somebody ripped it from their VCR, it looks like, VCR quality, from April of 94. And I'm watching this and I'm like, they're not even calling him Gorilla Monsoon. They're calling him, you know, Bob Morello, which is his real name. Later on in the show, of all people, Bobby the Brain Heenan. Bobby Heenan comes out and makes a cameo appearance on this show. And I'm like, what is going on here? Because in 1994, Bobby had already moved on to WCW. So here he is now on this bingo show with Gorilla Monsoon and Sean Mooney. I'm like, what the hell am I watching here? And it's comical because when Bobby goes to introduce himself on set, he's like, hi, Bobby Heenan, World Wrestling, and they kind of caught himself and he goes, World Championship Wrestling. And they all, you know, by the end of the episode, they all share screen time together. Because at first I'm like, well, maybe Bobby won't be on screen at the same time with Gorilla because they're in two different companies and that's not allowed. But by the end, they're sitting on the same couch. There's Mooney. Mooney had already been gone for like a year by this point from WWE. And I'm like, how did I not know this existed until now? How many episodes of this is there? This is the only one I could find, though, on YouTube that's been uploaded, but it's amazing. Now, when you watch it, it really isn't that good. I will say that. It's not like you're going to get blown away by bingo. I know, it's hard to believe. It's actually really not good, and it's really not that funny. But just seeing these guys together in a non-WWE show, even though it kind of reminds me a lot of how they used to shoot Primetime Wrestling or the old Bobby Heenan show, I get that vibe a lot by watching this. But it's not a WWE production at all. And like I said, Bobby was in WCW by this point. I never knew that he and Gorilla worked together on a show like this after he had left the company. So like, as an old school fan and a fan of Monsoon and Heenan, I'm watching this and I'm like, this is unbelievable. Just the fact that I didn't even know this existed, it just blew my mind. So if you want to see it for yourself, go on YouTube, type in Bingo Break. Like I said, it should be one of the first things that comes up. I'm more than happy to direct some traffic to that video. And check it out. It's just a trip to see those three guys together. And of all things, they're on a televised bingo show. It's literally a show where they play bingo. And they tell you, like, in whatever market you live in, these are the locations where you can go and buy your bingo cards. And I'm like, did they think that this would actually succeed? You know? But then again, there used to be a show, I actually think they're bringing it back soon, called Supermarket Sweep, which I actually loved. I used to love watching Supermarket Sweep. And I know bingo is a big deal for some people if you're over the age of, 88. But this is wild to see. So check it out. It's pretty cool. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me. TheSolidMonster@gmail.com is the email address. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Let's start here with Brad in San Jose. With all the hoopla over Disney buying Fox. Yeah, that was a big story this week. What would happen if Disney got into the pro wrestling world and purchased WWE? What would the positives be in said merger, and what would the negative consequences be, if any, if the mouse buys the company? And this is interesting in light of this news of Vince McMahon starting his own entity outside of WWE. But yeah, that was one of the big stories this week, besides the net neutrality stuff, was Disney buying 21st Century Fox. It's kind of like WWE buying WCW in a way. I don't think you would find too many wrestling fans in hindsight thinking that overall that was a good thing for the wrestling industry. In fact, in a lot of ways, it kind of killed the wrestling industry. Not that, companies aren't successful and making money now, but, for a long, long time, in the absence of there being a solid number two, you only had that number one. It did give rise, the death of ECW and WCW did give rise to Ring of Honor and some other companies over time, I guess TNA. And TNA, did produce AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, all these other guys, and some of them came to Ring of Honor first. So maybe you can give credit to ROH, but a lot of those guys would have been in WCW had WCW not died, or ECW. CM Punk, I have no doubt in my mind that if ECW didn't die and they continued on for another 5, 6, 7 years, CM Punk would have been one of the top stars in that company. Paul Heyman would have looked at that kid and said, hey, I want to build around you. Heyman was his biggest advocate down in Ohio Valley. But the death of WCW was a bad deal on the whole for the wrestling business. So I see this and I'm like, well, it's not exactly the same kind of situation, but it reminded me of that because it's one less movie studio. And I see that as being, a bad thing. I was going to say, you know, get ready for fewer R-rated movies, but Disney owns a bunch of subsidiaries that produce R-rated films all the time, so that actually is not necessarily true. I know it's easy for people to go, oh, well, because Disney bought, you know, 21st Century Fox, all of a sudden, you know, every movie is going to be, you know, cartoonish or it's going to be PG. That's not exactly true. But one of the negative consequences, potentially, could be if you are someone who prefers WWE to produce an edgier product, a Disney-owned WWE would probably look very different than you would want it to look. Now, again, I'm not saying they would double down on PG and make Mickey Mouse the raw GM. Disney owns a lot of different properties. They own ABC, ESPN, Marvel, Lucasfilm. But it's tough to envision them buying a wrestling company. And I know it probably kills WWE when people say that. We're not a wrestling company. We're an entertainment company. You're a wrestling company. You do produce other stuff. It's not, you're not wrong to call yourself an entertainment company, but you're a wrestling company. It's what you are. Embrace it. So it's tough to envision Disney buying a wrestling company and marketing a product that, you know, in any way would stain their brand. I think they would be very sensitive to that. But at the very least, I think if you're someone who is holding out hope that one day the company might return to the Wild West of the late 90s or push things in a more risque direction, then you should be rooting against any at all Disney involvement in WWE. If the mouse buys the company, as you say, it would be the first time WWE is owned and operated by a giant corporate entity. I mean, that's never happened before. That worked for a while for WCW because they had Ted Turner as their advocate. I mean, Ted Turner had a soft spot for wrestling. He used to credit wrestling with the success of the Superstation back when it was first formed. And, you know, he protected it. He invested in it. Eric Bischoff asked him for 2 hours on Monday nights on TNT, and Turner just gave it to him. I don't know that the people who run Disney would be as kind to WWE, you know, if there's a scandal. And God knows there's been a few of those over the years. I could think of one from 10 years ago. If there's a scandal, if ratings plummet even further than they already have, if they had a bad year or there's a really bad quarter that they have, if they suddenly have to cut costs because they're under a tight budget, like, there could be some bad times ahead. Disney may look at the books and say, this is just not worth it. Now, would they keep the McMahons in charge? As part of any deal, would Vince have to leave? Or would he have to share creative power with someone else? I'm not so sure that would be a bad thing, which I said earlier about this whole thing with Vince setting up his own company. If he were to either step away, which I don't think he will, but if he was to kind of relinquish some responsibility and power, I don't think that would be such a bad thing. So that's another big question. Right? Everybody who thinks Vince is out of touch and old and everything, a Disney buyout, hey, that might solve that problem. But let's say Vince goes. Let's talk about that. Let's say Vince McMahon actually does go away. He surrenders power, he makes this deal, and, you know, would Disney put non-wrestling-minded people in charge of running it? I mean, I think of Jim Herd. Jim Herd was a Pizza Hut manager, and he ended up being brought in to run WCW, and he wanted to turn Ric Flair into Spartacus. You know, when you bring in people who don't know shit about the wrestling business, things can go south very quickly. So, on a more positive note, you really sort of map this out, you look at the positive side, Disney is a gigantic company with a lot of money behind it. How much of that money they would want to put towards pro wrestling, I don't know. But what's the one thing that's killed more wrestling companies than Vince Russo over the years? The lack of funding. They have no money. Well, with a Disney deal, I don't think that would be much of an issue. And also, you know, like I said, Disney is huge. I could see Disney integrating WWE into any number of properties that they own. And that could be a good thing. A lot of crossover potential there. You know, we're kind of already seeing that with the coverage of WWE on ESPN, which Disney owns. That's great exposure for WWE when they get featured on SportsCenter. When Brock Lesnar wants to show up in studio and announce, hey, I just re-signed for another 2 years. All of a sudden, it becomes a big sports story. You never would have seen that 5, 10, 15 years ago. Maybe one day you walk into Disney World and they're selling WWE shirts and WWE action figures. I mean, there's just way too many variables to know for sure if it would be a net positive in the long run. Would it be a net negative in the long run? They seem to be doing a pretty good job with the Marvel franchises and the Star Wars franchise. I mean, I don't see too many people complaining that, oh, they ruined them. Disney ruined these movies. There's a new Star Wars movie out this weekend, in fact, that people, I think on the whole, seem to be pretty happy with. Those Marvel movies and those Star Wars movies were money-making machines anyway, long before Disney got their hands on it. And I think Disney has largely let them do their own thing. So that's an encouraging sign, I would say. All you Marvel and Star Wars fans, by the way, feel free to chime in. You would know better than I. Would you say that, you know, the Disney move for them has been good? Has it been bad? Has it just not really made much of a difference at all? I mean, that could be a window into how they might treat WWE. Tramel from Brooklyn, New York. What are your thoughts on WWE dropping the Bad News Barrett gimmick because it got too over? Yeah, you know, I didn't mention this on the podcast last week, and I should have. Wade Barrett did an interview with the Buzzards Wrestling Podcast, and he claims the reason that he was told that he was not allowed to use the "I'm afraid I've got some bad news" catchphrase anymore was that it was getting a positive response, and that they wanted him to be a heel, so they ordered him to stop doing it. And he says he didn't agree with the decision. He figured, hey, if they're going to cheer me, then let's run with it. WWE felt differently. They didn't want him using the phrase, so they made him King Barrett instead. And he makes it very clear in the interview that he did not support that decision. The whole "you're supposed to be a heel" argument is such horseshit. Like, imagine them telling Steve Austin back in 96, "Hey, look, pal, you're supposed to be a heel. And we've got all these people buying your shirt and bringing Austin 316 signs to the shows. We can't have that. You're getting too over." Like, it's preposterous to even think about that. "We don't want you using the Austin 316 catchphrase anymore." The guy's crime was that he was too over. It's amazing. They wanted him to play heel. Fine. I get that. That's what they wanted him to do. I mean, I thought that the wrestling business was, you know, a business that lived and died based on fan feedback. Isn't that what we always hear? Isn't that what they always tell us? It's all about the fans. The fans dictate who gets over and who doesn't. Isn't that what John Cena said in his promo when he was going back and forth a few months ago at Roman Reigns, and he's telling Roman, "Oh, you don't get it. It's all about these people. They have the power." I could practically hear the laughter from across America when he said that, but that's been their position for years. It's all about the fans. Are you telling me that we've been lied to? That we were bamboozled, hoodwinked, tricked, duped, deceived? Are you saying we got worked? or as Hulk Hogan would say, we worked ourselves into a shoot? I mean, if you see something is working, you don't kill it. That's the thing I don't get with Barrett. It's not like it was disrupting any big plans they had. They didn't have any big plans for this guy. They lucked into it. The people happened to get behind him. He was a bit player. He was a mid-card guy. What is the harm in running with it if it's working? Oh, we might have to come up with a plan for him. We might have to write something for this guy. Oh, no. The hell? They got 20-some-odd people, 30 people who write these TV shows. You luck into something where the guy is actually getting over with the audience. I just don't understand the mentality behind that. Amay from Mumbai, India. "Like you, Shinsuke Nakamura is also my pick to win the Royal Rumble match, but Brock Lesnar not being advertised for Elimination Chamber means that the championship will not be defended, and that chamber would be to set up a number one contender. Does that give away the fact that a superstar from SmackDown is winning the Royal Rumble match?" Well, only if you think Nakamura or a SmackDown guy is going to win the Rumble. If you think a Raw guy is going to win, then it doesn't give away anything. Just because you and I think Nakamura is going to win doesn't mean that everybody else does. I mean, originally I had AJ. AJ was going to be my pick. Then he won the belt. Now, if he loses the championship this weekend, oh, God, I don't even want to think about that. But if he does, I might switch my pick because he is the person I originally had pegged for the Rumble. I still think the end game is going to be AJ and Nakamura on the SmackDown side, whether it's for a belt or not. So if AJ keeps the championship, then Nakamura makes a lot of sense. There's no need to subject Roman Reigns to winning the Royal Rumble again in Philly. I just think that would be unbelievable for that. I will say this. That would take brass balls if they have Roman Reigns walk into Philadelphia again and win the Royal Rumble match. I just don't see that happening. And why do it? They're still trying to push him as the big babyface on Raw. It's not like, you know, they've changed their minds. They want him to be the big babyface, the top babyface in the company. So why would you subject him to this when you know going into it it's going to be a hostile crowd? There's no need. Give the fans something they might actually cheer for, which is a Nakamura win. Even if you're not a Nakamura fan, I guarantee you'll have more people in that crowd cheering him winning the Rumble than you would cheering Roman. You could spare him. And he's still going to go to the chamber and win and become number one contender and face Brock anyway. So, but only if you think a SmackDown guy is going to win. Does that give away the fact that that Roman would win the chamber in February? Josh from Gilmanton, New Hampshire. NXT takeovers are my favorite events WWE does all year. What if they did a King of the Ring takeover event? The winner would get a main roster call-up and a championship match. What are your thoughts? I don't know about the championship match. I'm not really sure what championship they'd be going for in their first match on the main roster. I like the idea of bringing back King of the Ring, even though, you know, they're already planning to use that name for their new UK TV show. I think it was PW Insider who said that a couple of months ago. And they're pretty reliable when it's come to news recently on the UK stuff. So if they're going to call that show King of the Ring, I can't imagine that they're going to have King of the Ring, you know, as some kind of concept on you know, NXT or the main roster. But, you know, my question would be, why does it have to be for a main roster spot? Like, I think it makes more sense to have qualifiers on TV in the weeks leading up to the Royal Rumble match for a spot in the Rumble. You can have, like, one NXT person in the Rumble. And maybe from there, they get promoted to Raw or SmackDown. Otherwise, I think that they should treat NXT as much of an equal as they can. We hear Triple H talk about this all the time when he does these conference calls. I don't really look at it as developmental anymore. It's a brand all by itself. Well, you know what then? If you want people to look at it that way, then you have to treat it that way. Right? So not everything should be for a main roster spot. Like people are, like they're locked up in jail. Like NXT is prison and they can't wait to break out, go to Raw or SmackDown. I think for some of those guys, it's just the opposite. I think there are guys on the main roster right now who would love to break out and go back to NXT. They just won't admit it. Or their paychecks are too big. At the end of the day, it's all about the money. I think you do a King of the Ring tournament for, if anything, an NXT championship match, not a spot on the Raw roster. You know, War Games proves that NXT can be the place where good ideas get a second life. Raheem from the Bronx. Years ago, I figured the day would come when Triple H eventually shaved his head. But why does he look like Stone Cold Steve Austin now? Triple H has the bald head, the beard and goatee, black tights, and a black leather vest. I never saw that coming. You know, he's got a point. Although Austin never had the big beard, the big bushy beard that Triple H has now. I'm sure Triple H always wanted to be like Austin. Now he finally has his chance. Soon he'll be telling us he doesn't know whether to shit or wind his watch. Jake from South San Francisco. Very important to make that distinction. He's not from the North. He's from the South. I was browsing through wrestler mugshots over the years. I found a bunch of interesting faces like Lex Luger, Scott Hall, Kurt Angle, and Chris Jericho after his fight with Hurricane Helms. But the one that caught me off guard was Big Show. I've actually met Big Show in person. He was very friendly to me and always strikes me as being a sweet guy in interviews. I don't know what the story behind this is or what kind of charge he would be arrested for. Could you explain, since it's always fun to hear stories from you? Well, thank you. There really isn't much of a story for this one. I remember two times that he was arrested. One was, and I know this one because there were a lot of news stories locally about it. One was after an incident at the Marriott outside the Nassau Coliseum back in 98, I want to say. It's funny, you know, me and my friends, what we used to do, we would go to these Raw shows at Nassau Coliseum, and when it was over, we would camp out at the Marriott, which you could literally walk right over to, and we would camp out there outside the bar, because we weren't old enough to go into the bar. And when the show was over, we would just camp out there because we knew the wrestlers would be coming right into the bar, where they'd go upstairs and whatever, shower, come back downstairs, and they would go right for the bar. I mean, I could vividly remember Road Warrior Animal and Draws. I don't know where Hawk was, but which is kind of funny, actually, because at the time, I think Hawk was doing an angle where he was the drunk one, and yet he was the one guy of the Road Warriors who did not go into the bar. But I remember Animal and Draws coming in together and Godfather walking into the bar, and he was just like a jovial guy. He was saying hello to everybody and giving people high fives. So anyway, I guess there was a fan. WCW had a show at the Nassau Coliseum. I think it was a Nitro. Again, this would have been back around 98 or so. And there was a guy who, you know, was in there and he was harassing Big Show. And they actually got it on camera. There was security camera footage. And this moron, who I'm sure must have been inebriated, is harassing the Big Show at the bar. I mean, why the hell would you want to pick a fight with the giant of all people? So Big Show, if you watch the video, I remember Big Show sort of like blows him off. Yeah, 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 whatever. And the guy just wouldn't leave him alone, and Big Show just decked him right in the face. And I think the charges either got dropped or they found him not guilty. He was never charged. He was never sentenced or anything like that. Now, the mugshot that Jake sent me in this email was for his other arrest, which came actually later that same year. This one, I didn't know too much about this one, but in the mugshot I saw, it said Shelby County. And so this was an arrest that took place in Memphis. So this happened in Memphis, Tennessee. And what happened was there was some female hotel employee that accused him of exposing himself. It's basically what happened. It got dropped. There wasn't enough evidence. So twice arrested, but never actually served any jail time. Terrence from Ohio, if that is his real name, he wrote into the show. He was very unhappy with me about my treatment of TNA. His email is riddled with spelling errors, so I am going to try to correct them myself as we go along here. Otherwise, I have not done anything with this email. I'm just going to read it as is. Why is everything that comes out of your mouth into your little headset about TNA hatred and lies? All you do is spout off bullshit about TNA while making excuses about the WWE product. When TNA puts on a great show, you are nowhere to be found. Yet when NXT has its weekly snooze fest, you are the first to report on it and talk about how much of a genius Triple H is. You jerk him off more than Bruce Pritchard. Yes, apparently I talk about how much of a genius Triple H is every single week. I would love to know, by the way, the name of this podcast that he is referring to. It's definitely not this one. Anyway, Terrence continues. Actually, I know why you're doing this. And let me stop here. I swear I have no idea what he's trying to say with this next word. I think he was trying to write the word because, but he spelled it NECSYSE. Like, even if he's doing talk to text with this, like he's, you know, reciting it into his phone or something, like that is so far off the mark. His phone would probably pause and ask him to put down the fucking crack pipe. So let's assume he meant to say because. Okay, we'll just assume. You're doing this because you're trying to be the next Sam Rivers. You want WWE to send you guests for your little show, and you want to be on the pre-shows and on countdowns. Thankfully, I never have to worry about seeing you on Impact or NJPW. You'll never see me on Impact because we have fucking minimum wage laws here in New York. He says you are a disgrace to the internet wrestling community, and your show sucks. And to that I say, you know what? As much as it pains me to admit it, he's right. He is absolutely right. You got me. Terrence has me all figured out. From the moment I started this show 10 years ago, I wanted to be the next Sam Rivers. There it is. There's my admission. Now, I didn't know who the fuck Sam Rivers is, so I looked him up online. He's the bassist for Limp Bizkit. He's apparently dating porn star Kayla Page. So yes, I admit, I have always aspired to be a rock star and to date a porn star. I never did get to live my dream. So I live it vicariously through the great Sam Rivers. You can see Terrence, by the way, when the circus comes to town with the rest of the clowns. Dylan from Long Island, buy or sell on the better heel, Eddie Guerrero or Vicky Guerrero? Huh. I am very curious what kind of response this generates from all of you. Because for me, the easy answer for me is Eddie. Eddie was a masterful heel. Even when he was cheered as a babyface, you know, he was still lying, cheating, and stealing like Hogan. Hogan is one of the best babyfaces of all time. But he never stopped acting like a heel. He still did all the eye gouges and all the back rakes during his matches. Eddie was kind of the same way in that regard. He never really changed much. The fans just ended up taking a liking to him. But when he was on as a heel, he was one of the best. Some of those promos he cut in 2005, like during the Ray stuff, were disturbing. And also, he made money as a heel. For all the heat that Vicky got, like from the crowd when she would walk out, and she did. I mean, she generated some of the biggest heel reactions from like a live crowd that I've ever seen. You couldn't even hear her speak. It was so loud. Just by opening her mouth, she would get booed. But there was not a single person buying a ticket to a WWE show to see Vicky Guerrero. So Eddie is the easy answer for me. To me, being a good heel, it's about more than just the people booing you. Roman Reigns gets booed out of the building some weeks. That does not make him a great heel. And Steven from Las Vegas. We'll do a non-wrestling one here to end. Since we know Danielle Harris is one of your favorite horror film actresses, I wanted your thoughts on half of those in the horror fan community severely trashing her for expressing her feelings on how she feels sad about not being in the new Halloween film from David Gordon Green and Danny McBride. I think it's crap. That's what I think. I mean, Danielle Harris was part of the Halloween franchise. She has every right to express her disappointment if she is sad about not being asked to be included in the new film next year. The idea that they're bringing back Jamie Lee Curtis for a Halloween reboot. They're going to ignore every Halloween film that came after the original, so not even part two. They're just going to ignore everything after the original Halloween. It's not going to follow any of those storylines. We don't even know if they're going to keep the storyline in from part two about her character and Michael being brother and sister. The Jamie Lloyd character, which was the character Danielle Harris played, she was supposed to be Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter in the later movies. She will not be acknowledged at all. And so Danielle Harris, all she said was she was bummed. That's like literally all she said. She was bummed in the new movie because Laurie Strode, the character, has a daughter, but the daughter is named Karen and it's not her character. That's all she was saying. She was bummed because Laurie has a daughter in the new movie and it's not her. She wasn't trashing the new movie. She was sad. She loves all the Halloween movies. She was in a bunch of them. She was even in one of the Rob Zombie versions, even though I think she played a completely different character in them. But I think it was part two that she was in. I think it would be cool if they could get her, even if it was like some kind of cameo in the new movie under a completely different character. But that's not the direction they're going in with it. But people jumping down her throat because she said, I'm bummed I'm not going to be able to work with Jamie Lee Curtis. What's so bad about that? These people need to get over themselves. So if you have mailbag questions, you know where to go. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. It's been parked there for 10 years. Not going anywhere. You can follow me on Twitter. @Solomonster is my handle. I will be live tweeting during the Clash of Champions show. I will have a Clash of Champions review up, as always, on the YouTube channel in the hours after the show goes off the air. So if you don't want to wait a week, you won't have to. You'll have my full thoughts on the show on YouTube by early Monday morning. And you could always download the MP3. I keep telling people and people keep forgetting, but if you want to download or stream the MP3 I always put a link to the audio in the video description under the YouTube video. So that is where you can go for those of you who would prefer to listen that way. And as I mentioned earlier, I had the chance to talk to Brandi Rhodes, who is now a woman of honor in ROH. She was a part of the pay-per-view main event, in fact, on Friday night. She got into some of the action there. And we talked about her time in ROH. We talked about her new reality show on the E! Network. Talked about her time in WWE and why she left Impact Wrestling earlier this year. How that all went down. So it's a good interview. I enjoy talking to her. She was very nice, very likable. And I'm going to include the entire interview here at the end of the show for those of you who either want to listen to it again, or if you haven't had the chance to go on YouTube and listen to it, you don't have to. You can listen to it here. This is my full interview with Brandi Rhodes. I will see you guys tomorrow night for the Clash of Champions review on YouTube, and I'll see you back here for episode 527. That'll be, Christmas. Is it Christmas Eve? I guess it is. I guess the Sound Off falls on Christmas Eve this year, so I will see you for a very special Christmas edition of the podcast next weekend. So until then, enjoy the interview with Brandi, and I'll see you guys back here again next weekend. Take care, guys. Jason here on the Sound Off, and with me now is former WWE announcer, former Impact Wrestling Knockout, and now a woman of honor in Ring of Honor. She hit the trifecta. She's also starring in the upcoming season of WAGS Atlanta, which premieres on the E! Network January 3rd at 10 p.m. Brandi Rhodes is on the line. Brandi, how are you this evening?
Hey, how are you doing? I'm pretty good.
I am doing great. A little cold here in New York. I don't know how it is by you.
It's pretty cold, and I'll be on my way to New York at 5 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, so I'll be freezing, all day tomorrow. It'll be great.
Now, let me start with your new show. As I said at the beginning, you're part of the cast for WAGS Atlanta, which, for those who don't know, is a reality show that follows the wives and girlfriends of professional athletes. How did this all come about?
Actually, it wasn't a whole lot to it, at least on my end. The casting for the show contacted me. At the time, I was living out in L.A. and working on a completely different reality-based series, an idea, an in-house idea that had been drawn up about me. And we were working on that and kind of close to closing that one up and getting ready to run with that, hopefully, pilots and all of that. And we were contacted by casting. My management team and I, and they wanted me to do a Skype for WAGS Atlanta. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. That sounds good. Thinking that most of the time these casting processes take forever for shows like this. In the case of the rest of the cast, they had been cast for an entire year at this point already, but that was unbeknownst to me. So we did the Skype session, and a week later, my management got a contract for me to start filming the show, which was crazy in my opinion, because, again, they were already cast. They had been cast for a very long time, and then I think at the last minute, they decided they wanted to add one more person, and that ended up being me. So soon thereafter, picked up shop in L.A. and moved on over here to Atlanta, and there we went. Start filming right away.
Now, what's the experience been like in terms of getting along with other cast members and even the filming itself as far as, your privacy? I imagine that has to be a concern when you go into a situation like any reality TV show. Has that been an issue for you, or has that been easier than you expected it to be?
Well, one great thing is, coming from the world of wrestling, I already know I don't have any privacy. There's no such thing as privacy in 5 years. I mean, you wake up, you go to the airport, there's a ton of people standing there. You better have your makeup on and be ready to smile. So as far as privacy goes, I was very prepared to have a intrusive cameras and all of that. But the hardest part of the experience for me was fitting it into the already rigorous schedule that I already had and then Cody already had. I think that they were shocked as to how busy wrestlers actually are, because, they were working with people who were retired football players, and they don't do anything. They just sit around and, you know, and another guy who, you know, maybe fights once every 6 months, you know, so they got plenty of time. Their wives don't work, you know, so they have plenty of time to film whatever, you know, whenever they said go here, they were able to. Half the time I would get a text message saying, hey, can you film tomorrow? And I'd be like, I'm in San Francisco. So no, I can't film tomorrow. I have to film as soon as I get back. So a lot of times I was jumping off of planes into hair and makeup and then boom, having to go straight to filming. So if I ever looked really haggard on the show, that's probably what the situation was. No sleep and lots of travel and just trying to, you know, make it for different things. But aside from that, you know, it was pretty easy to get into filming and, you know, a lot of that stuff. I thankfully have been in wrestling long enough to know, you know, we just do things and we don't get a whole lot of say. So
now your time with Impact Wrestling came to an end about 6 or 7 months ago. There were stories at the time floating around about why, that it may have had to do with an outside project that you were working on. I mean, I assume that outside project was the reality show. Is that what it was? And also, I guess, what was it that they had an issue with?
Oh, yeah. No, so, yes, it was. It was for the show. And the way things work with me, particularly, because before a wrestler, I guess I'm a on-camera talent. So my management team works very hard to protect that part of my life. So whenever there is anything related to TV and film, there's a period where I'm able to exercise that, where at least for the period of time that I need to be filming, I need to be basically available. And everybody knows this. It's pretty standard. I feel like I'm not the only person in the industry who does that. Pretty much anyone who works in TV and film as well as wrestling does similar. So it's not something that's ever surprising to people. So it was working out fine at first. Where the biggest hiccup came in is a big portion of my story on the show is my wrestling career. So they really wanted to come and film me wrestling. And they were saying, no, we can't do this. Otherwise, it's going to cost X amount of dollars. And the dollar amount was pretty steep. Pretty unrealistic. So in that case, I said, okay, well, you know, if we're not able to film this here, we're going to have to film it somewhere else. So I'm going to have to exercise this clause and move on and figure out another way to get what I need. And of course, Ring of Honor, they are phenomenal. They're so easygoing and easy to work with on everything. Not that they don't have structure. I mean, Sinclair Broadcasting, you need everything. You need to have all your ducks in a row. You need to know exactly what they're doing. Their lawyers have to prove everything, of course, but they want to help. So when Wag said, hey, well, we need to film Brandy, you know, in a wrestling match, they were like, absolutely. When do you want to come? We can do this. So that ended up being a big help, you know, with the transition to going to Women of Honor. That's basically the story. It's, we weren't able to get things that we needed on film. And unfortunately, we just had to part ways.
Now, you were a ring announcer in WWE for many years. I know you first started out in FCW. You had an athletic background. You were a competitive figure skater. You're wrestling now, and I'm going to talk to you about that here in a little bit. But why did we never see you in the ring in WWE? I mean, was it something that you wanted to do, but they just had other ideas for you?
I was hired as a wrestler. I reported to FCW and commenced training just like anybody else. What happened was one day they needed someone to ring announce, and me being brand new, and they had no idea that I came from the TV news background or anything like that. They had no clue. So they were saying that they needed somebody to ring announce at one of these FCW shows, and everybody was freaking out because nobody wanted to ring announce. And I was thinking, well, what are they freaking out about? Like, that's way easier than all the stuff that they're putting themselves through. And, you know, at this point, I haven't learned anything yet. I've been there for a week. So I said, yeah, oh, I could do it. Don't worry about it. I got it. Don't worry. Just tell me what you want me to say, and I'll do it. And I did it. And they were blown away because they were like, what? You just got here. where'd you learn to do that? And so then they figured out my background and everything. And it turns out on the road, they needed an announcer as well. So whoever called whoever and said, hey, this girl's good. She's ready to go. let's take her on. And, you know, I had always gone into that role with the encouragement from the coaches and the thought that, hey, you know, this will just be a transitional thing for you. You will absolutely be able to transition into wrestling, but, you know, keep you training, all of these good things. And, you know, we'll be able to make this happen. Unfortunately, it's a catch 22. Sometimes if you do your job so well, they don't want anyone else to do that job. So it's very hard for them, especially when they never saw you train. They never saw anything that you can do. They've never seen your personality outside of that talking head position. It's very hard for them to want to do something like that, especially if they're happy with what you're doing. Now, if, you know, I was thinking the joint out as an announcer, then of course I think people would say, well, let's give her a chance, because otherwise, you know, we're going to have to get rid of her, you know. But I think it was just a situation of, you know, good and bad. They're very happy with me, with what I was doing, and therefore unable to see any other options. I think when you have a lot of people and you're looking, of course, to do as much as you can with as many people as you can, if you already have one person in a position that you're very happy with, you're going to be reluctant to move them into something that is foreign just for the sakes of being able to utilize everybody else. I mean, if someone else has been training, you know, nonstop for 4 years and you haven't known what to do with them, well, you're more likely to give them a shot in ring than someone who was your ring announcer who, you know, has trained but don't know much about it, and so on and so forth.
Now, you found a home this year as one of the Women of Honor and Ring of Honor. I think I saw you mention online that you're going to be wrestling for the very first time in Philly this weekend at the TV tapings that they're doing at the old ECW arena. You seem pretty jazzed about that. What's your experience been like so far working with that crew?
It's been fantastic. I have nothing but good things to say. The women that are there and that have kind of pioneered that portion of the company, they're very passionate and they're very proud of what they've been able to do. And I'm excited to be coming in where I'm in, because they've laid the groundwork already. So now it's a situation in which I can kind of reap some of the benefits. However, I can also help how I can help. And of course, me being on a television program like WAG is very helpful to them. It's going to get eyes on the brand. And, you know, we have them filming me at matches and things like that. So it's really going to be a nice balance, and looking forward to continuing kind of the marriage of the two, the Women of Honor side and the WAG side, and hopefully being able to cross as much as I can.
Yeah, one more note on the Women of Honor stuff. I noticed that 6 of the top 10 most watched videos on Ring of Honor's YouTube channel are Women of Honor matches, which surprised me when I saw that. I mean, clearly the interest is there. Do you get that same vibe?
Oh, yeah. The fans are very, very behind Women of Honor. It's treated the same on the shows. I mean, like, they're always some periods of time where women's wrestling is kind of treated like it's not of as much importance as men's wrestling. And especially my time spent ring announcing, I would see that a lot, you know, that people would joke that that's the time to go get popcorn and things like that, when really, you know, the women are working just as hard as the men. And we're working hard to entertain as best as we can. So one of the most refreshing things about Ring of Honor is, when the Women of Honor matches come in, the crowd is very into it. They are not, you know, turning away. They're not going to get popcorn. They're not on their phones. They're paying attention and they're invested, and they're just as loud as they are for the men's matches, which is really amazing.
There was one question I had. I know your husband, Cody, had made news recently with the announcement of this all-in super show that he and the Young Bucks are planning for next year. I know they want to try to sell as many as 10,000 tickets, which is sort of unheard of for an independent self-financed show. Have you had any input or role at all in the planning that's gone into that so far?
Nope, I've had zero. This is all them. This is their baby and what they want to do. I'm sure I will have involvement in the show, you know, once more details become available. I'm very proud of what they're doing, and I think it's going to be fantastic. I absolutely think it's going to be a success. And I think fans are, like, really excited about that because this is kind of the first time in a long time, I guess, that their input has really mattered. And so I'm seeing this as being like a really big, really cool situation for both the wrestlers and the fans to be able to have a show like this. And I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, Brady, I know you've got a lot of irons in the fire right now. Ring of Honor, WAGS Atlanta. I believe you're also going to be a style blogger for a major publication starting next month. Let people know where they can follow you on social media and anything else that you would like them to know about.
At the Brandi Rhodes, T-H-E, Brandi Rhodes, on Instagram and Twitter. So it's the same handle. My style blog, my current style blog, is Not Another Basic B. And like you said, I will be blogging for another publication coming up real soon. So that's something to look out for as well. And then one more thing I want to make sure people know is, if you're watching WAGS and you are specifically tuning in to see myself and Cody, please do not be disappointed. I am not introduced until later in the season, so I will not be on the first or second episode. That much I do know. So everybody chill. Yeah, I've seen a couple of, like, people get little press, you know, snippets, and they've said, like, oh my gosh, I'm so angry. I watched this. I didn't see anything.
I was going to say, you know, I was looking earlier, and I saw some tweets from people who were upset. They said, wait, you know, I'm two episodes in here, and she's nowhere to be found.
Right. So letting everyone know in advance so that they're not upset. If you watch the first couple of episodes, you're not going to see me. So either, you know, plan accordingly.
So again, don't forget WAGS Atlanta premieres Wednesday nights on E! Starting January 3rd at 10 p.m. Brandi, thank you so much.
All right, great. Thank you.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
And there was one moron who tagged me in a tweet. He says, Smarks like everything from Japan. This guy has a picture of The Rock as his avatar, and he's quoting wrestling catchphrases on his timeline, calling other people Marks and Smarks when you've got another man as your profile picture and you're quoting Psycho Sid. Sit the fuck down with that nonsense. You don't get to sit at the adult table when you spew nonsense like that. Go stand in the corner and face the wall.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.